The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
What are we talking about here? Orgy? Is it a human sacrifice of some kind?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I've studied the human mind. I've learned how to read it and ultimately control it.
Fascinating. I can't wait to read it.
It's $14.99 on my website.
Okay.
Plus shipping and handling.
Even if I buy it here?
It ships from somewhere else, isn't it? And I've been handling it.
Paul Perillo.
Very attractive man. Can fit a whole octopus in his mouth. Sort of an animal magnetism about him.
And Andy. And Andy?
Do you have any idea what it's like, Tim, to be up to your elbow in a zebra's vagina?
Andy Hart.
What does it make you think of?
I guess it kind of makes me think of your penis.
Then you get it.
Eric Scalavino.
You know, that is so like you. You call a guy a douche and you get your first museum show out of it.
For now, anyway.
It smells like cabbage on this floor.
That's the smell of dead dreams.
I go to the clubs at night and people are like, hey, who's wearing the coleslaw? You know how hard it is to get laid when you smell like coleslaw?
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Oh man, they are planning one hell of a party.
What a day in the NFL and in New England Patriots. There's so much going on here, from the whole NFL debacle and the Green Bay game to the Patriots game and then getting ready for the Bills this week. It just seems chaotic. It's crazy. We're out of sorts. It's not the usual Wednesday here at Gillette Stadium, but we've got 2 hours to talk about it. Emails are already coming in. People still want to talk about Sunday night's game. People still want to talk about the Seattle-Green Bay game and, of course, the ref situation. It's media day here at the Patriots, and it's a big crowd. Bigger than usual on a Wednesday because now the news guys are here, you know, because now, you know, the story has transcended sports and has leaked into the world of news. So the real important people, the real important reporters with ties on.
I'm sure they'll get Bill's thoughts on the officials.
Yeah.
You know, the questions that the sports guys couldn't get to the bottom of on
right.
Monday,
right.
They'll get to the bottom of right. today. Or on Tuesday.
When will they learn? They get made bigger fools than the regular sports guys.
Yeah, and we do a good enough job on our own.
Right.
Of that one. I do want to start off, Freddie, with an apology.
Yes.
I tweeted out a picture today of Andy Hart interviewing Brandon Lloyd,
right.
Which was to be shown on PFW TV on Thursday.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like that's going to be the case, despite the fact that that picture shows it. So I want to apologize for false advertising. I believe it will end up being Steve Gregory
okay.
instead.
All right.
Brandon Lloyd decided to abruptly end the interview.
Yeah, I was there. It was kind of odd.
I
don't know what the deal was with that. It's just strange. Anyway, Steve Gregory will be the interview.
I believe so.
For Comcast.
Andy can get to the bottom of that when he gets here.
So, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Freddie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you feel like out of rhythm a little bit? Has this whole, you know, few days taken you out of your normal rhythm? To me, I feel out of sorts.
Well,
unsettled.
Yeah.
Sort of like the Patriots offensive line.
I do think that the officiating has sort of cast a... I don't know, negative light over the entire season. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's like a strike almost. It's like a player strike where you just look at the season as an asterisk. And you're like, are these games really taking place? I mean, there seems to be problems every week
yep.
that are impacting the games. And obviously it culminated, I think, Monday night with the last play. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying. It is kind of out of sorts. It's just
Yeah,
you know, the games are happening, and there's just always something going wrong. There's an event taking place every game.
And I don't want to get into the whole, you know, ref negotiation, what the refs are asking for, what the league is asking for and all that, because I'm still not completely clear. I hear one side, then I hear, you know, and we have all kinds of different listeners. I would love it if there is a labor lawyer out there who actually – you know, has kept abreast of all this stuff, if they would call in or write in and give us their interpretation of all this. You know, from what I understand, the pension demands are unreasonable based on what's going on today with labor. But on the other hand, there's some things that the league is sort of, you know, being a little stingy on, according to what I've read. And I read a bunch of reports this morning just trying to get, you know, find one report that was even-handed. And it was really hard to do that. So, up until that point.
I do think there's blame to go all around. Right now it seems like the Roger Goodell and the owners are taking the brunt of it. And I'm not absolving them. I do think that they deserve a lot of it. But I also think the owners might be, the referees might be at the very least equally
From what
culpable.
I can gather, from the outset, the refs made ridiculous demands. And that kind of set the tone for everything. And they just haven't recovered.
Right.
You know, and now it's almost kind of like, you know, the refs are acquiescing a little bit. I guess they made a little bit of headway this morning with the whole crews. You know, the league wanted to add the number of crews that would be available to on any given Sunday. The refs felt that would make it easier to be fired because they'd have these guys standing by. So they agreed that these additional crews would not be, you know, true refs, that they would it'd be sort of a practice squad. Which to me makes sense. I mean, to have guys, you know, on hand because of injury, health,
right,
whatever, you know, the problem is performance. I think they should be on hand for performance too. If a ref stinks, he shouldn't be reffing.
I agree.
You know, and to me, that's a gray issue right now. And I'd love to hear somebody who really knows the issue to make the case one way or the other, or to just present it to us in an even-handed way so that people can make their own judgment.
Yeah, and you're right, because I'm not sure that we all know all the information. Maybe someone who's a little bit more up on, the labor side of it, you know, the labor negotiation stuff, might be able to fill us in. Freddie, we should probably point out, too, the Patriots made a transaction.
Hold on. Mort report is, and this is via Schefter, an agreement between NFL and NFLRA is at hand. Hmm. And both sides will work to have officials working this weekend.
Yeah.
So you heard that, Andy. Andy's here.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't hear it. I read it on Twitter earlier.
So that just came over. EEI is reporting it now as well. So as we speak, supposedly there's an agreement. So great.
Right.
Great.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. That's good news.
Yeah.
That's good news. Just real quick, Patriots did make a transaction this morning. They released Marcus Forston. And they signed Terrell McClain, both defensive linemen.
Forston will be back on the practice squad, I'm guessing, since they actually moved his locker from where it was to an empty stall that used to be Brian Waters, and it says Forston. So I'm guessing the plan is for him to be on the practice squad.
Okay. And McClain, sort of interesting. He's a 24-year-old second-year player, 6'2", 291. He was a third-round pick out of South Florida last year for Carolina. And this, to me, is the really interesting part. I mean, we all miss swing and miss on third-round picks, but he started 12 games. As a rookie.
Yep.
He finished with 19 tackles, one sack, one fumble recovery, but yet was still released on September 2nd. So I don't know if there's an injury problem there or an attitude problem or
no one knows why.
What the reason.
I actually, other report, because this came down right as we were headed to the locker room, and I asked a couple other reporters, and no one has any idea. And they all had the same reaction. There's got to be a story. There's got to be a third-round pick who starts 12 games shouldn't be cut the following year.
I'm sure strippers can figure that out. There's probably a report back from September. Some beat writer speculating why they might have gotten rid of him.
Yeah.
At that time. So I'm sure we'll get that. But that's good news. Apparently there is a deal made, and it sounds to me that the league must have caved, right?
Seems like it. Although the reports are that kind of the officials caved, because they had really balked at the new crews.
Right.
And it sounds like they've now caved in to the degree where it's going to be almost like a practice squad.
We just talked about that.
Yeah. So I think that's a concession by the refs.
So maybe they did that, and the NFL maybe did something with the pensions.
Right. Yeah, could
be. I mean, we'll find out, but I think both sides probably realized this is getting ridiculous.
So now, Hockley said a few weeks ago that these guys are still, you know, keeping up with things, training. I don't know how you do that, but they're ready to go at any time. Yeah, so
I heard last Thursday, Jerry Markbright, who is one of the overseers, he lost his job on this thing because he refused to do it for the replacement officials. He quit. He said last Thursday that if there was an agreement made, then they could work the game that night.
Right.
So I don't know if that's true, if he was exaggerating or how that
went. How do you keep in practice without actually refereeing?
Watching games, testing.
Sort of flies in the face of the whole full-time argument, though.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
If he could just roll out of bed and ref
the
game.
But I think part of the argument will be, and you may argue with me on this, Paul, they won't be as good as they would normally be.
Yeah.
But they'll be a hell of a lot better than these Jamokes.
Yeah, I will not argue with you on that.
So that's Paul has a new appreciation for the refs.
No, he doesn't.
Paul does not have a new appreciation for the refs.
Oh, come on. You can't say that you saw the difference now.
No, he said it's no different.
I didn't say that. This is a third rail thing because Andy starts yelling at me whenever we start talking about this. And you can tune in tomorrow night on Comcast to see the live version.
Well,
but
taped.
I do think live to tape. You're right. I do think that they're worse. I'm not arguing that they're not worse. I don't think that they're the other guy. To me, to have a better appreciation for the old guys means they were better than I thought. They weren't better than I thought. They suck. These guys just suck worse.
What about like just the game administration part of it?
I put a lot of the stuff on the players in terms of the way the game is unfolding.
Yeah.
Because they're acting like a bunch of thugs on the field.
Well, you know, that's
a
good point.
There's fights, there's arguments, and I don't just limit it to the players. It's the sideline, too. John Fox was enraged that whole game. He wouldn't have done that with all the same calls
if
they were regular officials.
That's a good point.
And I've never seen Bill like that, you know, to play fair here.
Yeah.
I've never seen Bill act like that. You see Bill question calls, and he wants the guy to come over, and you see with the hand raised, you know. But I've never seen him enraged the way he was for a lot of that game the other night.
Yeah.
On the sideline. I think that part of it is that they know these guys aren't to be respected.
Well,
and they're not respected.
Yeah, but you have to earn the respect. I mean, it's like there are some substitute teachers who get beat up on and others who are okay because they kind of know what they're doing or how to.
You realize real quick, I can't screw
with this. Right, it's an inexact science. It's not like there's a rule book as how to maintain control, but some have it and some don't.
But, you know, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say that, you know, coaches and maybe even players got together and said, let's force this issue by acting as crazy as we can just to make it as hard as we can on these guys.
I don't care for that then.
And you are a conspiracy theorist.
I am.
I don't care for that.
It's one of the things I like.
I'm okay with them, the Packers supposedly talking on their plane about, you know, boycotting the games or taking the knee on every.
Did you hear some of that? That was funny.
I'm okay with that. But if you go into a season and decide this is going to be a problem and I'm going to make it worse so that I don't care.
Yeah, I think the league realized that if they went another week, there would be what they call an optic problem. You'd see signs and stands and people walking out in chants. And all of a sudden, your product starts to show it from the stands, not just from the field.
Had a pretty good chant in Baltimore.
But they could see more of that every game.
I don't think there's any chance that you'll see one of the things that you just mentioned, and that's the walkout. I think you could see signs.
Or should you?
I think you'll see obviously you've already heard the chants. I don't think people would walk out.
But why would you? I mean, I guess some people, season ticket holders, are wealthy enough to just eat it, but if I bought tickets to a game, damn it, I'm going to the game. I can't afford to not use that $100 ticket or whatever.
Yeah, somebody says, well, you can save the money on the parking. Yeah, but I lost. These tickets are over $100 each in most cases.
And even as bad as it's been, you still have the chance to see Tom Brady throw to Rob Gronkowski. You're still seeing some of the entertainment factor. Maybe not 100%,
but some of it. The guy on Barstool Sports said that, you know what, I might be in the minority, but this is great. It's like WWE out there.
Yeah, I figured. That's the mentality that you get on that site.
Right.
It's great.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's great. No, I'm not attacking you, Fred.
I know.
I'm just
attacking
saying.
The site.
I mean, this is the same site that made fun of Tom Brady's child.
I lost all respect for that site.
That's a great site to follow your patterns
over. Good point. Good point.
I lost all.
Yeah.
That's all
I need.
I don't care
what they say.
I'm a little like Andy when that. It all takes is one thing. That's it.
Yeah,
I don't care if you're the most gifted guy ever. You lost all respect with that post on Brady's child.
Good point. All right. So webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket hotline. What's that locker room in there? I saw a lot of reporters, but not a lot of players.
No, the funniest part was all those reporters waiting for Rob Gronkowski to come in, and he never did.
Still waiting.
They're still just
huddled
around
his locker. Stop & Shop because he's out selling cornflakes.
Did you watch that last night?
I watched the video, yeah.
Wait, which one?
On Patriots.com.
Wait, what are we talking about?
The Rob Gronkowski.
E60?
Oh, no, his Gronkflakes.
Oh, I was talking about E60.
Oh, no, I didn't watch that.
It was okay. Yeah. I saw some people being critical that they kind of were trying to paint him as a bad guy. I didn't really pick up on that, although that's kind of the way my wife took it. I thought they were kind of juxtapositioning him as being the kind of atypical patriot that usually, and he even said the funniest part, you know, when they were doing the hoo-hoo on the draft stage and banging,
right?
His brother goes, he'd been a patriot for like 5 minutes and he got a phone call. Rob, get off the camera.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And that was kind of, I thought, how they were positioning it. This is a really unique guy, especially in New England. You know, this might work in Oakland and it might not even be a story, but in New England, it's a little, I thought that's kind of where it was funny. Like they gave him a camera to take on the Summer of Gronk.
Yeah.
And he actually used it. And like there was stuff from the various events, and one of which he was getting hammered on his 23rd birthday. And he said, and it clearly was midnight. He had just become his birthday. And he goes, that means there's another 23 hours and 55 minutes for me to black out.
Oh.
I heard that one on the radio.
I mean, I think bottom line is you got to be good. You got to be a good athlete to get away with what he's doing.
And
on this
I
scene.
Still say he's going to learn. He's going to, as he said, yeah. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't, you know, my family's not here. So after I practice and then work out, I like to go out. I'm not like some guys that want to sit around on the couch. And eventually he'll have a girlfriend and then he might have a family. And then it either becomes a major problem because he's still out doing this, or he does what most guys do and he's home with his wife, his girlfriend, his kids, and he grows up. I'm not really worried about him. I think the most overrated thing is like he's stupid and doesn't care. And like,
that's another one of my third real things with Andy.
Yeah, you hate
him. I do not. But I would never, ever, like, even pose another side of Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah.
This is something that Andy's very passionate about. I respect it, and I try to stay out of his way.
I think he's a fun-loving, good guy who's not nearly as dumb as people try to paint him.
I think if he was that dumb, he would have slipped up with the media, you know, already, and he really hasn't.
Or with anything. He hasn't slipped up. His biggest slip-up is he took a picture with an actress, he said, a porn star. He corrected Jeremy Schapp. But
actress.
I mean, the way I look at it, and I know it's a business and this isn't the be all end all, but you know my whole thing. There's not a lot of people in the world that have the right to be disappointed in you. One of them is his mother.
Right.
And she said, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of guys that would like to be doing what he's doing. He's young, he's successful, he's having fun, and I don't think he's crossed the line yet. I agree with her.
And
he hasn't crossed
either.
The line. And if his mother doesn't, then I'm okay with it.
I think he's fine. I think he's a fun-loving guy. I do think that...
Can't be a captain, though.
I don't think he's overly intelligent. That's where I would disagree with
Andy.
Well,
what do you mean by intelligence? I didn't...
Smart.
To me, there's a million different kinds of smarts.
No, I don't think
I wouldn't want
smart.
Him to do my taxes. No, I would not.
Does he have common sense?
I think he has a ton of common sense. I think he knows where the line is in a lot of different issues. I think he
And it
is
seems
aware.
Like he has a pretty good business acumen.
Well, I think that's his dad.
Oh, really?
I think his dad is kind of handling. I mean, Darren Revelle said this whole deal with Gronk Flakes was created by his dad.
And he was his dad was a sporting goods owner.
Oh, okay. A very successful. Built one of the biggest sporting goods suppliers or something
really?
On the East Coast. Wow. Yeah. He was very successful in his sporting goods or whatever.
But
gym equipment.
I couldn't agree more with Andy in terms of his fun-loving nature. I think there's a lot of guys that are out all the time that are bad guys. And they're getting in trouble. They're in strip joints. They're, 3 o'clock in the morning. They're driving home drunk. They're doing a lot of different stuff.
I didn't do anything.
I don't think that Gronkowski has ever been anywhere close to that kind of stuff. I think he likes to go out and have a good time. And even I think that you saw that thing on his birthday. Wasn't he in a limo?
Oh, I don't know.
I thought you didn't see it. You were just listening.
I mean, I saw it, but I didn't.
I thought he was in some sort of limo or something. They were saying on the radio.
Did not appear
today.
To be in a limo.
Because I didn't watch. I saw the thing Sunday. I didn't see the thing last night.
Didn't.
So I thought it was very interesting. I don't see him as being one of these guys that's in trouble. He's not a bad guy. He's the complete opposite of that. He is as happy-go-lucky and fun-loving as you can get.
He is a guy that could end up in the fountain in a Vegas hotel.
Oh, yeah. He could be a hangover. He could be a Rob Gronkowski, the hangover.
Right.
Could definitely be a – but I don't know that he would – I don't think he crosses the line.
I don't.
He was
either.
Very funny
I'm
in Stop
Andy.
And Shop. The whole Stop and Shop where they were like playing wiffle ball,
right.
And his brother's like yogurts, and he's throwing him yogurts, and Rob's trying to catch them all, and one splatters. Jeremy Schapp was not comfortable. He goes, "I'm leaving before the cops come."
Yeah, I'm with Andy 100% on that.
And I didn't think Schapp was bad. I guess he's gotten some criticism. There's some questions you have to ask. You have to ask about the Super Bowl. If you're doing a encapsulation of his year. Well, the scandal, or whatever you want to call it, after the Super Bowl, the dancing, the whole, that's part of the story. And Rob got uncomfortable. He's like, oh, there you go again, making a bit. Like, he didn't want to answer the questions, but you got to ask him.
Right. All right. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398.
Paul got an Italian.
Sandwiches today instead of Papagino's pizza. What's that all about, Kevin?
I don't know. Should I have not brought him down?
No.
Why would Kevin?
I'm just wondering, like, what? Why
I'd
the
be
change?
Happy if this became the regular thing so I don't have to bring lunch on these days.
I went up and I just tried to, because this is a massive flock, so I just tried to grab whatever I could and get out
is of this it. Was there pizza as well?
No, it was just this.
This is great to me.
So I'm wondering if it's a celebration of the ref thing being
so
over? Or?
Those are either Italian, Freddie, because I know you guys like Italian, or turkey.
Okay, good. Thank you.
It's not a religious thing, is it?
What?
I don't know. I know it's a big Jewish holiday. Can you not eat pizza on a Jewish holiday or something?
Well, I don't know about that, but isn't it Yom Kippur or something like that?
Yeah, it is today.
Does that have anything to do with anything?
I don't know.
You're Fred Kirschenbaum.
I have no idea.
That's how you got your job here, right?
Aaron's here. Ask him.
I did.
He said he was at Temple this morning, and he went with his kids and his wife, and they asked him to go on the stage to do something special. And while he's standing there, the rabbi goes up to him. He says, those refs suck. So even...
Yes, he told me that. I don't know that I would have shared it on this radio program.
But why? What's the big deal?
I don't know.
It's funny.
Can rabbis say suck?
Sure they can. In that context. all right. We got emails coming in. No calls at 508-298-0398 yet. But, you know, yesterday was all calls. So today it'll be nice to get to some emails.
So go ahead.
We can do that. Well, I was thinking we'd just take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go right to it.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pats tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time. 2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, Better Banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with Bill Pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call Better Banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
It's time to get down to the oldies with Paul Perillo.
Paul, big news in the disco. Donna Summer is dead.
No!
What did she sing? Hot Stuff, Bad Girls.
Last Dance, right?
Last Dance.
I got her part. Knows her for.
She works hard for her money, yeah. On the radio. Fred likes to paint this picture of me, you know, at the discos in my prime.
Okay.
I would have had to have been about four at the discos.
Attached
I like disco.
Donna
I'm
Summer.
Not afraid to admit it.
You had a Donna Summer album?
Oh, yeah. More than one.
Oh, yeah.
I love disco. I do. Still do.
Now, back to the disco kings of PFW in progress. Paul Boogie Nights Perillo and Fred Roller Coaster of Love Kirsch.
Roller Coaster of Love.
All right. Welcome back to PFW in progress. Thanks for joining us on this crazy Wednesday, but it's getting a little less crazy. Word came out just before the beginning of the show that the NFL has reached a deal with the NFLRA, the union for the refs, and reportedly they will be back on the job, I guess, Thursday? I mean,
I believe Adam Schefter's tweet said they are working to have them on the field this weekend.
Okay.
So that would specifically mean
we don't know
Sunday, but yeah. He might just be saying for this week's games. I don't know.
But really shortly, they'll be back. So it's pretty amazing.
My guess is they would try to rush for a Thursday night primetime game on their network.
Yeah.
You don't want the last debacle to be that.
Let me ask you a question. If they couldn't get it done by Thursday, so you had to go with the replacements Thursday night, but they were ready to go by the weekend, can they do that, you think? If you're the NFL, would you?
That's a very good point, Paul, because of that whole competitive balance thing. You know, what happens with one team on the sideline has to be the exact same on the other team. And if two teams have real refs and the rest don't, I would think that makes a difference. So, Paul, you might be right. It's either all or nothing.
I don't know the answer. I'm just wondering if the NFL might look at it that way.
Yeah. I think
I first thought about that at the very beginning of the season when they had the Wednesday night game.
You're probably right. They should. If they do Thursday, they should have to do all the games because that's not fair. As bad as they've been, that's really not fair. It needs to be balanced.
Yep.
Yeah, I was thinking about it on the Wednesday night opener.
The Ravens screwed again. Not, they got to play two games.
Well, I only played 15 hours ago. But the Wednesday night game when the Giants and Cowboys opened the season, I was wondering, you know, as the time was going by, well, they're not going to be able to ref that game. And then if they can't ref that game, I wonder if they won't be able to ref at all in week one, and obviously didn't matter until now anyway.
And that was the crew that everybody said, oh, they're fine. They were perfect.
They did okay.
So if they do have to use them, they probably should use that crew again on Thursday night that they think is good. Although I haven't kept track of the crews in terms of if there's any difference, really.
I'm sure it's, it's like the Cleveland Indians in Major League, you know, they're still bleepy.
Okay, so now I'm seeing on the NFL Network, Packers players who complained on Twitter will not be fined. I thought the original report was that no one was going to be fined this week on Twitter. Is it just the Packers players who complained? because there were players all over the league complaining, A, about their own games, but some other team's players were complaining about the Packers-Seahawks game. So,
well, we don't know the report, what they're exactly talking. Maybe they are just talking about that game and the result of that game, but also other players won't be fined either.
Yeah, because there's at least one Patriot who would be in that mix of potentially getting in trouble.
And I look, if they're not going to fine the Packer players, they shouldn't fine any player for anything that they said as a result of any officiating problems over last weekend or before.
Yeah, I actually would go the other way. I think everybody should be fined.
I
think
would
you
too.
Have to hold these officials like they're real officials, and if they were real officials, you'd be fining them for that, so you got to treat
Again,
them real.
Part of my point about the way everybody around them is behaving. And I agree with Fred. If you're not going to fine the Packers, you shouldn't fine anybody.
Right, I agree.
But I also agree with your point. They all should be fined.
Should have to treat them like a real official.
Now, listen, I'd like to think that this is America and, you know, you should be able to speak, but obviously you can't. They don't allow you to speak about the officials, right? So you should get fined for that.
Yeah, well, I don't have a problem with that.
That's breaking their rules. So you shouldn't be able to break the rules because they're replacement officials on Twitter.
You're devaluing the uniform. You're saying there's a guy in this, but he's not really someone you need to respect.
I don't really love Aaron Rodgers, but I loved what he said.
But
that was good. You see what he did? You know,
yeah.
In the opening
of the
show.
Yeah. Now I understand the whole thing, and it's not just football. Sports don't let coaches and players talk about the refs. But do you think that if they did, if they said, you know what, say whatever you want, after a while, guys that did talk about the refs would be looked at as whining?
Yep.
Yeah, probably.
And so they wouldn't do it anymore?
Some would.
But they would only do it when they really, really felt
there would be teams that would be developed in reputations as whiners.
Right.
And I think that it would curtail it a little bit. I really do.
But there's still some that, I mean, David Ortiz has complained about every strike ever. People
Absolutely.
Think he's a whiner. It hasn't stopped him from complaining about every strike.
But it's David Ortiz.
But that's on the field. You know, when he takes it into the dugout, all of a sudden
point is just some people are what they are. It, you know, you can call him a whiner. He's still going to do it.
I just don't see,
well,
you know,
the Ravens.
What happens? What happens?
And the Steelers.
You know, like, what would be the big problem if
Raiders, Jets.
All the teams came out and said.
Well, they don't want them questioning the integrity of the game.
Like these guys, it's hard enough on these guys. They don't need that.
But you can question a call without questioning the integrity of the game, can't you?
But. It's a slippery slope, so if we just chop it all off black and white, you can't talk about the officials, it's easier.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's rules, and everywhere you go, there's rules. So it's not unfair.
Yeah, I have no problem with it.
I just don't see the big deal if they decided to say, you know, well,
coaches and players.
Our players are adults, and they're allowed to.
Swing a big bat when it comes to influence.
Right.
And so if they're out there criticizing the refs, the fans will follow suit.
All of a sudden, they're throwing bottles of urine at them.
Right.
Oh, well, again, I think we just give everybody a free pass. I mean, if you throw a bottle at someone, then you're an idiot.
Right.
It's not because someone
There's
told
a lot of idiots in this world.
No, but seriously, if Haloti Ngata complains about a call, that's okay? Now a Raven fan can throw a bottle at a ref?
Just saying. It's easier if you just
I mean,
cut
is
it off.
Haloti Ngata's fault or black is it the guy white. Who threw the bottle's fault?
I think it's just easier if you black and white it. You can't talk about the officials. And I have no problem with it. Because it falls under my umbrella. If you want to talk about the officials, then give back your paycheck, and you can talk about the officials all you want. But if you want to collect your $5 million from this league, you play by my rules.
Well, that's what I said, that it's the rule, and that's they can deem to have any rules they want. I just think that's a little silly.
508-298-0398, it's the Ace Ticket Hotline. John in L.A. is on the line. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Hey, John.
Excellent.
Haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I've been a little crazy busy with stuff. But we've always talked about you can't really judge the drafting because, you know, certain guys aren't going to fit in certain systems. I'm getting a little tired of that now. When I see Brooks Reed and Connor Barwin and guys like that getting it done,
J.J. Watt,
it's really frustrating. To see a really familiar outcome to that game the other day, where we literally could not stop a thing. And I don't know, I haven't listened to yesterday's show yet, so I don't know if you read my email, so if you did, I apologize for bringing it up again. But the Rossi Dowling pick has the potential to be the worst, absolute crappiest pick of Belichick's reign, because we had a perfect position in the draft, that first pick of the next day, We had all night to think about it. We had plenty of guys waiting for us. And when we take a guy who everyone's like, oh wow, that, you're not supposed to have the oh wow reaction to a draft pick until like the third round or the fourth round. Not in the second round.
That's interesting.
But it was a value pick too. I know no one wants that. But the whole thing was he was like a top 10 cornerback talent, but because of the injuries and everything, you could get him in the second round. That was part of the story.
He's Brandon Tate all over again, except for a DB. But I would say better even.
He was thought to be a better player, yeah. But yes, the same value based thought.
Was he thought to be that good?
Yeah. There were some people believed he was a, quote, top 10 talent.
Well I hope Belichick he hurries up and becomes one because...
He'd have to get on the field to do that,
I think. The problem with in today's day and age, like, number 9 and 10 on that list as far as cornerbacks may not be that good. You know what I'm saying?
He didn't say a top 10 cornerback.
He was believed to be a top 10 talent by some people.
Okay, take that back then.
That's in the other problem, is there's a lot of guys that are top 10 talents after 1 year who are, like, seventh-round picks the next year. Do you remember when Brian Brohm was going to be the first overall pick in the draft? And did he even get drafted? He's bounced around.
Is he the one that got his knee blown up, though?
Yeah, but still. Did Brady.
I know what you're
pointing. Brady had his knee blown out, and he came back being Tom Brady.
Yeah, I know what you're pointing.
It seems like there's, like, literally thousands of guys who are top 10 talents at some point in their sophomore, junior, senior year, whatever.
You know, when John first said that could go down as the worst pick, in the Belichick era, you hear that immediately, and you automatically you say, "Well, come on, let's not exaggerate." But
he's not.
It's the highest pick that to this point has done the least,
right? Yeah.
And in a position that's really super important to this team.
Yeah,
that's
a good point too. Not like it's at a it's not like they took a quarterback who can't get on the field because Brady's still great.
Right.
It's a position of great need.
Sterling Moore and
it's a position
all these
of
guys
great
who
need,
nobody's
and he can't get on the field.
And I saw Mike Rodak actually kind of alluded to that recently, kind of saying he's going down the road of Darius Butler. He's real close to next out of town, maybe.
Yeah. We're really lucky to root for this team. They do an incredible job. So I'm really not trying to just because of a horrible loss. But can you imagine the historic, phenomenal greatness of this team if we just drafted really solidly on the defensive side of the ball for the last 6 years? We've drafted horrendously.
The
last couple has gotten better, but if they just sort of done an adequate job, if they had just literally had PFW listeners pick the staff pick, they would have gone undefeated at least once.
Well, Pioli set him back a few years, but we're recovering.
It is funny.
And I have one last theory on Devin McCourty. I think, and it's a theory we've talked about before, where Devin and Jason switched teams, but they did that so Jason could get the contract. But Jason got the contract.
Now switch back.
Switch back now.
Right. Good point, John. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, John. I'll bring up a point
I heard John's name on the TV the other day.
On the TV?
He wrote a script for The West Wing. They had a reunion to do a political ad about, reading your ballot. It was like kind of a public service ad. And they mentioned that John Cockerell wrote the script.
Nice.
He's getting around.
It might have been nice to
congratulate
tell him
John.
That when he was on the line.
Well, I emailed him as soon as I heard it.
I threw something out there to Andy this morning, and I'm interested in your take, Freddie. Devin McCourty, and John just brought up Devin and Jason. Jason signed the big contract. Would you give Devin that contract?
Hell no.
Yeah. No. I it's funny. I think it'd be universal that people would say no.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Patriots are kind of, like you said, Paul, earlier today, they've painted themselves in a corner because he's the captain. He's the defensive captain, So, you're kind of stuck with him for now. But, I wouldn't look long term until I see some type of turnaround.
Any.
And
some
now,
other people
having
are,
said that, I don't think he played as bad a game as a lot of people are saying he
nor
did.
Nor does Greg Bedard.
In Baltimore.
He's been kind of
Greg
defending
Bedard
him.
Thinks he was great.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Quote. Excellent. He played much better than he's being great. He was great.
I think, again, and you guys laugh at me, but in terms of where cornerbacks are today in the NFL, I think he played average.
How often do we do that? I'm not trying to start a fight or anything, but like...
No, because when I'm judging...
You said there were no good safeties
when I'm
because
judging
we were hard
guys,
on Merriweather.
I always try to keep it in context where, you know, there's like one Darrell Revis, you know, and everybody else. And then,
well, how about guys that aren't anywhere near the reputation of Darrell Revis, like a Brandon Carr?
Yeah, I
who's
think,
considered kind of like,
and
a,
I think there's a handful of those, but
a
I think,
middle of the road kind of guy is light years better
but
than Devin.
He's
McCoy.
Also a $50 million middle.
No,
of the road
I'm just
guy.
Saying, you know,
Fred's a little bit right because guys that are decent make a lot of money, like they get paid.
Right. No, I know they
teams
get paid,
get
but I think that there's a lot more of those guys than
I think
he's given credit for.
I agree.
And even guys that get paid like that, some of them aren't that great. Like you right. know, Asamoah. You know, I don't know if he's
okay.
really that good.
Listen, I don't know if he's worth the money he's getting, but he's a hell of a lot better than
yeah,
what the Patriots put out.
I'm just saying, but it, you know, it's really hard to be really good at that position in this league, and I don't know why.
How about just to be competitive, to be better than he's been?
But I think he was okay. That's what I'm saying.
You really thought that performance the other night was okay?
He had some good plays and he had some bad plays. Absolutely.
Thanks,
what were the good ones?
Early on, he played pretty well. You know,
because I thought that his guy was open all night. I thought all night his guy was open.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to.
The ball got thrown to him a couple times, but he wasn't on
you
his guy.
You always have a better memory than I do, Paul, for like, you know, I just kind of like take it all in and then I have this overall viewpoint. I just remember, you know, watching the game, writing about it as I'm doing it, you know, not being upset with him throughout the whole game. On individual plays, there were a few, but for the most part, he was okay.
So you
in fact,
were...
I remember saying at least once, oh, that was a good play by McCourty.
But you've definitely changed your standard, your eyeball.
Oh yeah,
you're no longer holding him to Pro Bowler, first round pick, defensive.
That's why I said the other day.
But that's kind of my point.
Could that first year have been the false?
Well, I think at this point it's pretty
clear. Yeah. And I don't think we'll ever get back to that.
That's not.
And possibly were our eyes deceiving us in that maybe it wasn't as good as we thought? He just happened to get a little.
That'd be a good story to write. Go back and watch every one of those games with the view now.
I think he could still have a nice career in the NFL, but he's not going to be a Pro Bowler.
He didn't get beat on every play.
Yeah,
that I'll agree with. He made some plays too, but I thought he got beat far more often than he made plays.
Right. And it's almost like you're now holding him to the standard of whatever you. The worst game you saw last year, and you're like, oh, you know what, it wasn't
well,
that bad.
That could be part of it. Yeah,
And not even just that he got beat down the field consistently. That, to me, is hard. Yeah. It's hard to complete the amount of 25-plus yard passes that Baltimore completed in one game.
The problem is, he's not always on the guy's hip. And then when he's on the guy's hip, he doesn't seem to judge the ball correctly anymore. And maybe he never did.
And the one, to me, that's completely...
And then we all might be saying completely different things if he had held on to at least one of those interceptions.
Well, at least he now becomes Otis Smith, as I said earlier. Or even, you know, Asante Samuel is the guy they say is like a gambler.
Right.
Well, at least a gambler wins some and he loses some.
Right.
Let's win some first.
Right. If you got catch one of them.
And
this might be a different topic.
And I went back and I kind of defended him on the Torrey Smith pass breakup when Torrey Smith hit him. I still think he needs to catch that ball. He got both hands on it.
Yeah.
And I thought initially Torrey Smith got a bigger hit on the ball with, like, his helmet. I don't think he hit the ball. He hit him, and that kind of, like, dislodged it.
See, well, the other day he was rolling around with it, and the ground popped it up out of it.
That was one of the plays that I'm talking about. That was one of the plays that McCourty made. That was a terrible throw.
Oh, that was a play?
Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible. Who said that was a play?
He had four pass breakups. That was one of them.
But who said he had plays?
Oh, yeah. I definitely.
People say he made some plays.
No,
Fred
no.
just said it.
No, I definitely don't think that he made a play.
I don't think
get
he made
ball.
Plays on the ball. That's my point.
Flacco threw it up there, and it was a bad throw. But I'm just saying, even then, if he just holds on to the ball, it's in the stat book as an interception.
I understand.
And
I understand
thinking
that.
Differently.
I understand that. You become Otis Smith. You get beat a lot, but then you make an interception. And,
or at least Kyle Arrington.
And that's a key. But my point is, don't mistake the interception for being a play. When the ball gets thrown to you, you catch it. And
it's not like he stepped and made a break on the ball and stepped in front. That ball was lobbed up, and he didn't catch it. I mean, Torrey Smith had to run it down.
There were times where he did that. As Andy just said, you know, he'd get beat, and then all of a sudden you'd be like, there's the Devin McCourty, remember? He's right in the guy's hip. He dives. He knocks down the pass with one hand. That, to me, is a play. I don't – even now when he gets his hands on the ball's thrown to him. It's not that he's in great position.
Which happens a lot. I mean, that's
it happens all the time.
Kyle Arrington had a 7-pick season last year.
He probably had five
of
them like that last year. Sometimes it happens.
And if you take advantage of those, it helps your team.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Tom Curran, and I talked to Tom a little bit in the locker room today. He works for CSNNE, N-N-N-N-E. He wrote a column that was very critical of McCourty after the game.
Ooh, did he fight Bedard?
Extremely critical. And then Bedard comes out and was really defensive of McCourty, both in print and on the radio.
He's a Rutgers guy.
Now, listen, I said that.
That used to happen all the time in this town. The Herald would write one thing, and the Globe would write the exact opposite.
And I'm wondering if this, but I'm wondering if there's something to that in this particular case. And Tom was asking my opinion, and I told him what Andy and I had been talking about. And, you know, I'm not saying that he got beat on every play, but he did get beat a lot. And I thought, to me, the most egregious thing is you're still up two points late in the game, and you let a guy – I mean, what happened on that last drive? What did they do in the last drive?
Yeah. Bing, bing, bing.
Right? Right? Right for a penalty, kick a field goal.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was clear Joe Flacco was comfortable stepping back and just turning right and throwing the ball up and saying, my guy's better than your guy.
Right.
And when we say it up, it makes it sound like it was a lucky play. These weren't lucky
plays.
They
were jump balls.
No, he's throwing it to
jump balls.
He's throwing
they
it
were
to
wide
a,
open receivers that he was throwing the ball to.
But, see, I think he's throwing it before he's open, knowing he's going to be open. He's throwing it to a spot, and he said, my guy's going to be there, your guy
understood,
won't.
Understood, but if you had a game like that the other night, why wouldn't you do that?
Well, that's my point.
I threw 15 passes 25 yards downfield. 11 of them were caught.
That's my point.
Why wouldn't I do that?
They believe every play their guy is going to beat your guy, but your guy should win some of those.
But I think it's this sort of derogatory luck factor, like, oh, they're just throwing it up for grabs.
No,
that is not what was happening the other
night. No, it was calculated, no doubt. It was calculated.
You know, now we're back to they're going right after Devin McCourty.
Right. It's like saying that the Brady and Lloyd thing. We talked about this yesterday, I think. The Brady and Lloyd stuff, those are great plays. That's a timing play between quarterback and receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Though a lot of times Lloyd was tightly covered, but Brady knows I'm going to throw it in his back hip. He's going to come back, as Andy said during the interview that Lloyd walked out on. He was on the sideline. He's very good at that. Those aren't thrown up for grabs.
No.
Those are plays that Brady knows his guy's going to make a play. Well, Brady knows Torrey Smith is going to beat McCourty. I mean, Flacco knows Torrey Smith can beat McCourty because he did it all night.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely
right. It's not luck.
Yep. And McCourty's got to knock some of those down to earn the respect of the quarterback, you know?
Or at least be covering the guy once in a while.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Let's go. Let's see. A lot of emails. Warren writes in London, there's more chance that McCourty gets cut than gets a new contract. He stinks.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what?
Warren doesn't
like
it.
Do you think there's a chance he'd ever get cut?
No.
I don't either.
I mean, what's it? 4-year deal for him?
He
I don't know if it's 4 or 5. It must be 4. He was late first round.
Yeah,
right?
So I'm guessing it's a 4-year deal. He won't get cut.
He and his agents certainly don't have a lot of leverage to ask
six,
for.
Is it 6 for the first half of the first round and 5 for the second half? Or 5 and 4?
I thought it was
four?
5 and 4, but
I
might be
right.
Wrong.
Kevin, there's an email from a dean in Florida, article about the ref who blew the Packers call. I don't have time to read it, but if it's interesting, let me know. If you want to look at that for me, would you?
Would you, if you could?
That's Rex. He called yesterday.
Sexy Rexy.
Patrick in Brooklyn's calling in on the Ace Ticket Hotline.
Brooklyn,
hey, Patrick.
Pat. Brooklyn.
How you doing, actually? Patrick from Brooklyn.
Yes.
Okay, what did
guys,
I say?
Back to McCourty just for a couple of minutes. I don't know what the statistical measure is to determine, you know, how good a DB is, but it's one thing to get beaten. It's another thing to have 3 balls that you should catch bounce out of your hands. I'm beginning to think that the best thing to do with him is convert him to a safety and bring another corner in. I think that he's the biggest liability in the backfield now. And then I was just wondering what you guys thought about the missed tackle by Stephen Gregory and McCourty when that tight end jumped over somebody and then either bowled over the other guy whiffed on the tackle.
Yeah.
And then my last point is the big issue with the Patriots, why they haven't been over the top, and I'm putting the missed draft picks aside, is the fact that they seem to not be able to close out the games at the end, because what happens is the offense doesn't come through at the very end. They give the ball, they turn the ball over, and the defense just can't make the stop. It says to me that the Patriots have to establish a hardcore running game to close these games out, and they are too quick to abandon the run, and I think it hurts them in the end. I'll listen to you guys' response.
Okay.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, I don't know if it's about running the ball necessarily. It's just about executing, because at this point, I have more faith in Tom Brady than anyone else on the team. So if I need to close out a game, I don't mind him doing it, you know.
But
what do you think, Andy?
Well, he said I'm going to disregard the draft. Or you can't, because the best way to close out a game is to have more talent on the field, whether it's on offense or defense. And, you know, if it's defensive, if these corners, Rozai Dowling, Darius Butler, Terrence Wheatley, if they could all play, you'd have a better defense on the field when the team is trying to throw the ball to catch up.
Yeah.
So you can't discount it. Same thing, you know, it's a little bit separate now, but Lawrence Maroney, if you think the running game should be better, well, if he were a Pro Bowl running back now in the prime of his career, right? Because this is like year five or six.
He'd be getting up there, but yeah.
But
yeah.
Six, you know my point. You know, maybe not this year, but 2 years ago when you're saying you can't finish, you'd have a Pro Bowl running back that you drafted in the first round. So I don't think you can separate the draft from any time you're talking about performance, because the draft equals talent equals performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he would be a seventh year guy, Maroney. But
so hopefully you'd be saying, you know, he's coming back. You know, maybe I need to fill somebody else in, but you'd like to think he was good.
He's the veteran that you can rely on.
Right.
And that's not even taking into consideration how it would have changed other picks that you made.
Right.
You certainly wouldn't have taken two running backs last year. Maybe you still would have taken one. Who knows?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. If you hit on a couple DBs, maybe you don't take Dowling, you took the pass rusher. Now, it may be bad, too. You may not have taken Gronkowski, or you may not have taken...
The
butterfly effect is in full effect.
Yeah, so I don't think you can ignore the draft. But in terms of closing out games, I do think that's been a problem in the recent past. You know, the last year or two, they seem to struggle offensively closing out games. And obviously the reason is they haven't established a consistent running game. I do not think they abandoned the run the other night, though. I mean, I thought they ran the ball a lot. They just didn't run it well. And in the fourth quarter, they ran the ball on first down a couple of times in that last drive and got nothing.
Right.
And we talked about it yesterday. They had six carries in the fourth quarter for 3 yards. That's not going to get it done. They need to run the ball a little bit better. Now, you could argue that Woodhead got too many carries in the Sunday night game. Maybe they outfoxed themselves a little bit trying to get spread and
yeah, but the
and
six,
run it. But
didn't you say it was five?
I'm pretty sure. I know that Woodhead had a minus four in the fourth quarter. I think the other five carries were Ridley. Certainly the last two in that last possession, they were both Ridley. Ridley had a one-yard run and a three-yard run. Now, after the three-yard run, they got bailed out by the unsportsmanlike conduct. Instead of second and seven, they got 15 yards and a first down. So that didn't end up hurting them. But you can understand why Bill and Josh were a little bit reluctant, because they weren't getting anywhere. They weren't running it consistently enough. So,
well, that's what I would argue. As much as I like Ridley, he's shown some good things.
Yeah.
He's not yet established where you say, you know what, I'm just going to pound it to him, and more often than not, we're going to succeed. The person who have that confidence in is Tom Brady. More often than not, if I give it to Brady here, I'm going to succeed.
And I like the idea, and I think that a lot of teams make this mistake, so I'm not going to be hypocritical. I like the idea of that last, you know, that end of the game when you're milking a lead and you don't want to give the ball back to the other team, I think you have to throw it to get a first down. I think it's awfully difficult to line up when the other team knows you're running to run it three times and get a first down. I think that's a really tough thing for even the best running teams to do. And when you have a guy like Tom Brady, who you know 99% of the time is not going to make that game-changing mistake, why wouldn't you put it in his hands? I have no problem with that.
Right.
Now, do they throw too often in the fourth quarter in general? Last year, you could definitely make that argument. We talk about that Indianapolis game all the time. But Sunday night, I don't think they were going to run Ridley three times off tackle and get a first down. I don't know how you guys
Now, what do you say about the argument at that last drive where, look, the Ravens knew he was going to pass. Sack, pressure on the next throw.
Yeah, you can't let that happen.
Yeah.
That's a breakdown.
Right.
Like you said,
exactly.
the execution, Freddie.
Right.
But, you know, to me, you know, I'm going to be consistent with this, too. The Super Bowls, you guys have often criticized me for blaming the defense. Because I felt like even though they had subpar offensive games, they had enough points to win the game, right? But defensively, they couldn't come up with a stop. Well, in this game, I'm going to be a little bit the opposite. 30 points is a great offensive night, but all they needed was a first down to end the game, and they couldn't get it, and they put their defense in a vulnerable spot. Now, should the defense be absolved? No. They get 500 yards and 31 points. That's not acceptable. But the defense was good early. That allowed the Patriots to get a two-score lead. In the offense, all they had to do was get a first down in the fourth quarter twice, two different possessions. If they just moved it a little bit They were up 9 with the ball, and they stalled at midfield. And then they were up 2 with the ball, and they got two. They actually got 3 first downs in the drive, 1 on a pass, and then 2 on penalty.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, the penalties stopped the clock, so they had to get another first down, and they couldn't do it. And to me, at midfield, there's no real danger of that catastrophe happening midfield. You got to be able to get a first down there. The defense shouldn't have had to close that game out. Now, again, much like I said about the offense, I'm not taking the offense off the hook for the Super Bowls, scoring 17 points. But they had the lead, and all they had to do was stop them.
Yep. Mike in Maryland says, I just watched the entire game over again on my DVR. I was at the game Sunday, and I think Fred is pretty close with his assessment. Devin has struggled a lot, but I saw some things in replaying it that would lead me to believe that somewhere – that rookie star is still there, at least part of him. He did make some plays on the ball and some maneuvers to get to it. Bottom line is he needs to catch the damn ball. I think that would have changed, you know, we wouldn't be really talking about him as much. And
it would change the perception. Probably I'm not sure it would change the reality.
And not the performance.
Well, it would change the perception. That's my point. It would change the perception, not reality.
Absolutely.
Right. Keith says, do you think McCourty may have a shoulder or hand injury that we don't know about? If you look at his potential interceptions, he has the ball but does not complete the catch when he hits the ground or has contact. Also, if the safety is not playing over the top and you're Flacco, who are you going to throw to? The fastest receiver you have that is on one-on-one coverage with no safety over the top. Obviously, Belichick's defense doesn't play to the player's ability, and we need to start looking at him for the crappy product he's putting on the field.
Wait, I didn't know that the Ravens were a left-right team. I thought Torrey Smith moved around.
He said they go for the fastest guy who's in one-on-one.
Yeah, but they chose to line him up with Devin McCourty. My point is they could put him on the other side against Kyle Arrington.
And they did that once, too.
No, I know, but more often than not, it was against McCourty, and they choosing that matchup. That's my point. They're choosing to target, theoretically, your number one corner.
And where does Jacoby Jones fall into that category? Because he made huge plays on McCourty, too. Right? I think you said, at some point, you know, it's the coverage, it's the coaching, at some point your players aren't getting the job done.
Right. Because that's the thing, Fred. Remember last year it was all zone or man, he's too much. Now it's, you know, Bedard believes they're playing this scheme that's not suited because they're 5 yards off, not press, not deep. At some point, it's the player. He has to make plays.
Right. And if you
have to change things up, then you're compensating.
During the summer, Fred, you know, at some point, your starting cornerback should be able to cover any. And I'm not saying blanket everybody. I mean, you know, you're gonna have your ups and downs. It's a tough position.
Darrell Revis gets beat.
But you should be able to cover anybody on any given play. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to succeed every time. But I don't like this whole idea as, well, you can't ask Kyle Arrington to cover Torrey Smith. Why?
Yeah.
He's my starting cornerback. Why
can't
I ask him?
And if I can't, then...
You know, there was a play during the summer in practice where they isolated Shane Vereen on Rasai Dowling on like a little wheel route down the sideline. And there were a lot of questions to Belichick about, is that a tough play for a bigger corner like Dowling, you know, asking him to cover a running back? I mean, a cornerback on a running back is a mismatch?
Game. Right, right.
Like,
right.
I don't really understand that.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Now you don't have to worry about either of them because they don't play.
Well, yeah, neither one of them can get on the field.
Brian the Fox in New Mexico says, did any of you pay attention to the Patriots' safeties on Sunday night? Personally, my eye kept getting drawn to the woes of Ninkovich, Arrington, and McCourty, so I mostly missed observing the safeties. I did notice some nice blanketing of receivers by Tavon Wilson, finding myself optimistic that an unfamiliar corner was doing such a good job, then realizing it was number 27. Aside from Gregory's interception, I didn't really note him or Chung. How'd they do?
Well, Gregory's big play was a bad one when he got hurdled. I mean, that's...
Well, he had the interception early.
No, I know, but I'm saying his most crucial play in the game was for the negative. He does that a lot, too.
Now, Chung showed up in the run game where he blew up that fourth and short. He was the guy that...
They blitzed on that play, and he came up with a big
play. He made the play. But I think we're looking more in the pass. You know, we're talking more, how does he show up in the pass?
Well, and that other guy said, you know, maybe we need to move McCourty now permanently to safety. To me, that's not really a solution because I kind of feel good about my three safeties. I need corners, unless, you know, that means Wilson now tries to become a corner.
I need guys who can cover.
I need guys
on
the outside.
Right.
And that doesn't really benefit my defense. Okay, maybe he's not as bad as a safety, but am I better as a defense?
Are the Patriots playing cover two right now?
They they played a lot of single high safety the other night, I thought, but it's hard on TV. That's a better question for you guys.
Somebody said, oh, well, the Patriots are playing this cover two now, and, you know, it seems like they do. Now, this is before the game. They said, you know, they're playing cover two now, and they seem to be doing well with it.
I didn't think they played a lot of cover two.
I thought they got caught a lot with safeties out of position. I didn't think the safeties played very well the other night.
Yeah.
I didn't. You know, look, we know that Chung's forte is more to the play that you're talking about, getting to the line, getting physical.
And I think one of the reasons why it looked, you know, whether or not they actually played bad on the coach's tape, I think one of the reasons it looked like the safeties played poorly was because, A, Flacco had a lot of protection, and he had time to get these guys downfield where they could spread these guys out. So you see safeties running from, you know, long distances because Flacco had all the time.
Well, but there's two sides. I agree with you. I thought the pass rush was the worst aspect on the field.
Yes.
But I don't think the pass rush could have gotten there when Flacco was basically doing, like, 3- and 5-step drops and just throwing to a spot.
Sometimes, but the other times he was...
Because I thought a lot of times he did that. He just dropped back. Yep. It was a single read.
Yep.
It was Torrey Smith down the right side, and I'm throwing to a spot.
Yep.
And that's what gets back to what... I agree. The rush was terrible.
Yeah.
And I also didn't understand, and again, Bedard wrote about this, and I'm not ripping Greg. I'm actually... He does a good job kind of going back and breaking things down.
Yeah, no, it's...
And
it's,
he wrote,
it's...
they got so desperate in the pass rush that they flipped Ninkovich to the right side, brought in Cunningham at that defensive tackle spot, and brought in Scott.
Whoa. No.
Why is Chandler Jones? No, there was definitely plays that I saw
Okay, mostly, though, when I saw Scott, Ninkovich was off the field.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Because, in my opinion,
Jones was still out
Ninkovich
there.
Is the weakest link of the pass rush right now. He is that guy we like to make fun of, just kind of brother-lawing it with the right tackle. No. I'm not saying him
over
the years, we've had guys that just look. You look
once
at him.
Once they get engaged, it's
there's
done.
Nothing
it's
there.
Done. Right. There's
and
no second
to me,
move.
That's him right now.
Right.
And even I told you when they tried some stunts with him, he's not freeing up. He's just kind of running across the line. To me, he is struggling right now mightily, and I don't know how that can be fixed. Or if we talked about yesterday, it's time for maybe Cunningham to get a little more play.
I that's what I'm looking for.
Me too.
And I'm making the call for Jermaine Cunningham.
And let him fail. He may stink.
Right.
He may not deserve it, but
yeah. And he seems
to be faster and stronger.
He was very quiet the other night too, though.
Yes,
I mean
they all were. It was across the board.
They might be worried about him, you know, in strict run support.
But
I thought he played. I actually thought that was the only thing he did well as a rookie.
Yes,
I thought he did a good job setting the edge.
That's my point.
Yeah.
But maybe we got to throw out that rookie year a couple years ago for a bunch of guys.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, they made some positive strides the first two games against admittedly weaker offenses, and they took a step back against Baltimore. It doesn't mean that they're done. It doesn't mean this is 2011 Redux.
I heard one writer whose name will go unmentioned.
Why? We say names on here.
No.
In the locker room today.
He'll cry.
Well, you know, honestly, you know, one writer who was talking to him said, you know, I still think that, you know, based on all the – there's still going to be about 12 and 4. And, well, absolutely. God's honest truth, before the season, I had him much worse than that.
I didn't think there would be 12 and 4 before the season.
Before the season.
I think
so
this
all
is
of
a
us
big
idiots
week.
That thought they were going to be 12-4,
right.
You know, we're
right.
Wrong.
I think this is a big week, Fred, for you, because I know you're predicting, was it piss and vinegar and taking it out on the Bills.
Right.
But this is a defense that has to deal with, it's not nearly as good, but an offense that has more than the Titans and the Cardinals had. It's like a poor man's Ravens team. It has a receiver.
Right.
It has,
that's
somebody
why,
will
that's
line up
why,
at running back.
That's
who's
why,
okay.
When
let's
they,
see if
when
they catch
they do,
it.
When they do what I say they're going to do, don't discount it.
But what if they don't do?
I okay, gotta,
what if they do in their pants?
Then I'm really upset.
Two things, though. I got to wait and see who plays for Buffalo.
No, you won't be. You're
I'll
so
be upset at rap.
No, you won't. There's two things that I have to qualify. Number one, I want to see who plays for Buffalo, because it doesn't look like their guys are going to play.
Right.
So, I mean, that makes the task a little bit easier if it's Tashard Choice instead of C.J. Spiller.
Right.
If you had your choice of running backs.
And the other thing is, it's not – I mean, Andy's right. They have some pieces, but they're not as good as Baltimore.
Oh, not even close.
And Fitzpatrick, every game will throw you 5 chances. Every game.
Right. Yep.
So, you know you're going
to
have opportunities. You know you're going to have opportunities.
I'm a little bit more worried about Mario Williams – you know, going up against, you know, Nate Solder, if that's the side he's coming.
No, he's on the other side.
He's on the
other side.
Okay, either way.
He'll be against Vollmer.
Yeah, either way, if he's going up against Vollmer, and then, you know, Anderson going up against Solder.
You should also worry about the middle, Williams and Darius.
Sure. I mean,
concerning.
Look, I think they're going to take it to the Bills, and I think that's going to be a sound victory. It's not going to be, oh, well, the Bills stink. They don't stink.
Okay, give me your...
The Bills do stink.
No, they don't.
Until otherwise proven, they stink.
Okay, well...
Now, maybe I'll give you this one.
They stink from above you in the standings.
This might be one of those teams. Right. This might be one of those teams at the end of the year, Fred.
Right.
Well, you're very sarcastically mocking me.
So the Paul Perillo win-based formula, when does that take effect? Because right now the Paul Perillo win-based formula says they're ahead of them in the division.
Yeah, I'll take the Patriots' two losses over the Bills' schedule so far. I mean, to me, that's a big part of the 2-1.
So that's a good Arizona loss now.
They beat not at home, but they are 3-0 as opposed to Cleveland's 0-3.
Yes, I know. I'm just so now records matter. I don't know when to use his formula with him or against him.
I mean, listen, after 16, yeah, I know. He's the one with the index, right. Not me.
You're not going to walk out on this discussion, are you?
No, you can't get rid of me that easy.
Dan and Higgins writes in, Higgins and Hopkinton. A lot of why don't I just give out his phone number? A lot of people talked about the whiff tackle against the Ravens tight end. That was a good play if you trust your offense in the 2-minute drill. With 30 seconds left, tackle the guy, but with 2 minutes, let them score, get the ball back and score. That's what we did. I saw it at the time it said smart play.
Idiotic.
Steve Gregory? We're saying Steve Gregory whiffed and then McCourty whiffed?
That's idiotic.
No way.
That was an intentional double whiff?
Yeah, no way.
No
I
way.
I don't think so.
Yeah. They came a missed sack away from going in at the halftime, losing maybe 17-13, because Baltimore was an inch away from a 3-and-out on that ensuing drive. If that was the end of the game, you could make that argument. At the end of the half, you're telling me you missed a tackle on purpose at the end of the half?
Yeah, no way.
Smart play? No. Why can't you come up with three stops and make them kick a field goal there at the 10-yard line?
You're yelling at me.
No, I'm asking.
Nathan writes,
when you ask, you yell.
Nathan in Southern California. Should one thing I didn't hear you address specifically is if the refs cost us the game on Sunday Night Football. Although there were bad calls both ways, the biggest call that I thought made the difference in the game was the holding call on 3rd and 14 that bailed the Ravens out of a 4th and 14 near their own end zone and gave them 5 yards in the first down. The broadcaster replayed. That wasn't on 4th down, though.
No, it wasn't. It was a bad call, though.
Yeah,
it was a terrible call.
Broadcasters replayed the play several times in slow motion and couldn't find holding on any kind anywhere.
It was a 2nd down play, though.
This gave them the
that
ability
was the McCourty,
to continue
right?
the drive.
It was circumstantial.
Terrible call.
But you know what?
Patriots would, see, my problem with that call, maybe it was a bad call. I remember thinking at the time, it doesn't matter. They're going to kick the field goal anyway.
It was a bad call. There's no doubt.
They would backed up in their own end.
Oh, I was thinking of the one that negated the sack.
Oh, that was a good call. That was Spikes had his arm
around
the guy in the
end zone. Either way, I didn't think it mattered because they were still in field goal range.
Yeah,
even if they counted the sack.
But the McCourty one, the guy's right. The McCourty one was
egregious. That was a bad call.
It was egregiously bad, and they were backed up. They were going to have
third down.
It was a 2nd down play.
You sure about that?
Yes, it was going to create a 3rd and 14.
I thought it extended their drive.
It did.
Well, it did, but it could still have extended. Otherwise.
Right. So it wouldn't have made it 4th down?
No, I think it would have made it 3rd.
No. It would have made it 3rd.
No, it would
down?
Have made it 3rd down, but they would have gone for it on 4th down anyway. You still would have had to come up with one more play. You had to come up with 2 more plays.
But I thought the way that play unfolded, it's unfortunate, but to me it's one of those that happens. It almost reminds, you know, in Rocky, when they film it, he swings and the other guy moves his head and it looks like he hit him, but they're really like 6 inches apart.
Right.
That's exactly what happened on that play. McCourty puts his hand out to get, but he kind of whiffs on it. And for some reason, Torrey
Smith
stumbled
reacted to
and
him.
Like it looked like he got, but there wasn't actually contact on the play.
That was a bad, bad call.
Yes.
The email.
But to me, that
right.
was one of those bad calls that you say have been happening forever. That wasn't a replacement official's bad call. It was it kind of looked like it, but no, it doesn't really look like it.
This reminded me of the Colts game in 09 where the defense just couldn't communicate and mesh effectively, and they lost a game they had no business losing. Does Belichick have command over the locker room, or is it closer to 09 when a couple of spoiled apples ruined the bunch and they couldn't close out games? Are character players an issue this year? If so, who are they?
Well, no, I have no idea.
It doesn't seem that way.
I don't think that they have character issues, but
yeah,
it'd be,
but do they have character?
Not the same thing. I do think this late game thing to me is something to keep an eye on.
And you know what? That comes down to winning in the trenches. In those situations, you got to control the line of scrimmage, and they're not doing it.
What if this running thing
you know, maybe you take a few hits. You know, maybe you lose a game the other night because you couldn't do it. But for the greater good, like your whole thing, you can't just turn it on and off.
Well, they do. I will tell you, 52 carries for Stephen Ridley is the most since 2007 through three games for a running back.
So maybe
Lawrence Maroney had 54. A little different that year because I'm guessing some of those came late in, 55 to three games. So this is different than the last 5 years. I mean, it's a different spin.
And they've been in two close games and still been able to run the ball 30 times.
Shouldn't it have been more Ridley? I mean, now.
Right. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because now you're torn because you're running it the way you've run it when you didn't really run it with Woodhead in the spread. And these are, well, I'd rather see them losing, committing to Stephen Ridley. And he, well, son of a bitch, he only got the three carries for 6 yards or whatever. I'd rather see that because that I can buy into.
Right.
We're establishing a late game mentality. We're going to line up and we're going to pound you. You're not establishing that with Danny Woodhead. And you know what I mean? There's a difference.
Yeah, they haven't done, they didn't run it that way Sunday night.
Right.
Certainly not. But I wonder if maybe they're working towards that, and maybe there are going to be some growing pains, and you might be better at it, say, in December.
Well, I think that's a valid argument with this offense right now, with Lloyd being the focal point. 33 targets, he's the most targeted. And what was it, 12 and 13 the last two? These are new guys that they're working in that are having very large roles. We'll see if that leads to you're better down the line because you invested early. Because, I mean, we talked about it. Ocho Cinco had 32 targets his Patriots career. Lloyd has 33 in 3 weeks.
Right.
That's a difference. That's an investment in a guy. And the investment financially was just as big in Ocho, so you could have done the same thing and may have wanted to. Maybe that changes if they do that early in the year, Lash. I don't know.
Yeah, I doubt it. Steve.
Just be a lot more events.
You know what I like, though, when Fred laughs at himself?
Steve says, greetings from California. Been a Pats fan since I was 10 years old and since Brady has been at the helm of the offense. I've never once felt worried that we would bounce back. I cannot honestly say I feel 100% confident that we will this season. After Sunday's frustrating loss, which was total BS, by the way, at least I think so, that phantom holding call on McCourty to extend the last scoring drive for the Ravens just gets me so pissed thinking about it. I think we need this first division game to make a statement, a big statement. Now that the dust has settled, you have slept on it, Fred. Do you still think utter annihilation of the Bills is waiting us in the near future? Is the general consensus on McCourty still negative? I know that I am pissed about those drops. Love the show. Keep up the great work. I am not backing down. This will be an annihilation.
And what is an annihilation? What does it need to be? 20 points, 30 points? Like,
yeah, like at least three scores and never, ever in doubt.
Will you be you're not nervous now, right?
No.
Will you be nervous if they lose?
Well, it depends on how they lose. Yeah, I mean, it does depend on how
he's
they
expecting
lose.
A blowout.
You know,
I don't care how they lose. If they lose, I'm gonna. I'm standing,
then the people
I'm
that told me they were
going to
be 1-4 were right.
If Fitzpatrick torches them, you won't be nervous.
I will be nervous. Is what I'm saying.
Oh,
if they lose,
oh, okay.
It doesn't matter how they lose.
Okay.
Well, I could be nervous if they win too. If Fitzpatrick torches them,
if they
and
win,
they just squeak it out,
right.
I'm still nervous.
If they win 38-35, I'll be nervous. If they lose, I will be very nervous.
What if they win 21-17?
I'll be nervous.
So the only way to not be nervous is like 35-10, 35-17?
I want to see what Fred's talking about. I'm not expecting them to have a chance to lose the game Sunday. I'm not expecting them to have a chance to lose the game. And I'll be pretty nervous if it ultimately comes out that way.
I got to agree.
Andy's not. Andy said he's waiting until the ninth loss.
I think the league stinks. So I think
I know, but if the league stinks and you have three
and you're one of the teams
losses,
then you're the two-time champion Super Bowl Giants.
And you're one of the teams
that didn't
stink.
Make sense the way I said it, but you know what I meant.
Okay, well,
I mean, that's what this league is now. You got to get hot at the right time. You go on a four-game winning streak in November, December. All of a sudden, you win your division and you're hot going into the postseason. Okay. And everybody forgets your early season loss at Buffalo.
Yeah, if the league stinks and you're one of the teams that stink. I don't like it.
The Giants don't have bad losses?
Of course they do.
Thank you.
Yeah, but they didn't.
But the difference
did
is
they
beat some good teams.
Oh, I'm sure.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they did. They went 9-7.
They were terrible.
No, I thought it was more
they were
win,
a terrible
loss,
media.
Win,
loss, no. There were losing streaks in there. At least one of the year, I believe they had a four-game losing
streak.
Much more difficult schedule, too.
Oh, geez. He's always got a reason. He's always got a reason why it's different for everybody else.
Well, why do you, like 20 minutes ago, you criticized me for saying, oh, now Arizona's a good loss?
Well,
no, I'm not saying that.
Because your win-loss formula and everything.
But are you trying to say that every loss is the same?
No.
Okay, then we agree. So why are you making fun of me?
I'm not yet willing to say the Arizona loss was a good one. Here.
I'm not either.
Andy, you're not going to eat those turkey sandwiches?
I brought a peanut butter and jelly. I didn't expect there to be.
You still have room for turkey.
No, Stripper said in my photo of an interview that you'll never see on TV that I looked a little pudgy.
Oh. He's like a girl. You say that to him, and it's like it affects him for the rest of his life.
Maybe if you two worry, you'd lose about 30
Jacob from Denmark, why does
it's
everyone...
It's not just the shoulders anymore.
Why does
he likes to pretend that his belly stuck out because of a hernia.
Anthony,
well, he had it fixed, and he's still sticking out.
Anthony's
swollen now. It's all bruised.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ew.
And maybe it's because you came to work like 5 minutes after.
Does it still hurt when you poop?
No.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Because that would be, like, really problematic for me if, with the amount
of
time I poop.
Well, you don't think the stitches are going to break.
Remember the most famous trouble, Roosevelt Colvin, after he broke his hip? I'm just worried about my next bowel
movement.
I hear that.
Newsworthy item that we should discuss today is the future status of Julian Edelman. Based on Bill's comments yesterday, injury report, practice today, very strange kind of wording of the hand and how it, you know, and all these theories of when he hurt it, did he hurt it when he took the big hit, then kind of re-injure it or extend the injury on the next one, the touchdown.
Didn't this see, by the way.
Weird.
Didn't see him in the locker room today. And he has been.
And you said he had a bowling thing on?
Yeah, he had some type of brace around his thumb, hand type thing.
Which not only is it matter, which I don't really worry about as much at receiver, but if he can't be your sure-handed punt returner.
Right.
Well, now it's Welker who had to be back there. Do I want Welker back there all the time? You know, there's domino effects here.
Sure. Jacob in Denmark, why does everyone panic about the defense? They've had two good games and one bad, but last year they sucked even when they played against a horrible offense, like the Dolphins, Colts.
That is true. That is true.
I think they've made good progress, and I'm anxious to see how much better they'll be in December and January.
It's all true. Except if it's the thing I talked about yesterday where you now, okay, you're competitive against bad teams or adequate teams, so you set yourself up for that first-round playoff blowout when a good offense comes in.
Yeah, and I still, you know, Baltimore, I think, has improved offensively, but I still don't think of them as really a great offense.
No.
Brooklyn Mets.
There are no great offenses right now.
Paul, your football knowledge is second to none, but I'm pretty sure you're mistaken on the McCourty penalty. If memory serves, I was incensed because the Ravens were going to have to punt after that play, marking the infraction as a third down penalty.
It was second and 14 on the penalty.
Also, I'd like to give mad props to Brooklyn PAT, or Pat. Way to represent Home Slice.
Oh, everything he does is so...
You know, it could be Brooklyn Matt calling in as Brooklyn Pat and just fooling us.
Right, like, what?
And
who
now he's
Pat
giving
on Saturday
himself
Night?
Props.
Pat,
yeah.
Yeah. So my conspiracy antenna just went up.
And his lack of creativity is ridiculous.
I believe
Pat, Matt.
I believe the Ravens got called, and I believe it was Marshall Yanda, got called for holding on first down to make it first and 20. They ran Rice for 6 to make it second and 14, and that's when the penalty happened. If I am mistaken, and it was third down, I still don't think they would have punted. Still would have needed to make another play.
No, I think they would have had to punt.
I don't – how? Down 9 with 5 minutes to go? What are you punting for?
Because you're deep
the
in
game's
your own
over.
End.
The game's over if you don't get a first down.
You got to try to win.
You're not going to punt on fourth down regardless.
Well,
okay. I think they would have had to make 2 more plays, not 1. Personally. That was good that you had that. It was like a piece of dust on Fred's plate that he just had to eat right at that moment on mic. Anyway.
Lombardi Larry writes in.
Lombardi Larry.
The Patriots lost the last 2 games by 2 and 1 points, respectively.
That is correct.
Do you think this is a good or bad sign for the rest of the season, that the losses were so close and really could have gone either way? Did the replacement refs, who I know are now gone, contribute to this? All that seems fairly certain to me this early in the season is that the Patriots won't get blown out in a game. They are too offensively talented, and the return of Hernandez by the time of the Houston and San Francisco games is good news.
Fred, you want to answer that?
Sure. I think it's – I'd rather be close and have a chance to win every game than get blown out. It's obviously a good sign. If you're trying
that is true. I'd rather be close.
If you're trying to weigh losses,
I would rather be close too. I thought you were going to go on the, you know, have the replacement officials contributed to that?
No doubt about it.
I thought
wouldn't that be great? If by the way, Darren Revelle tweeted he doesn't believe the replacement officials will work another game, that it's over and they're going
to be. I think that's really good news.
Wouldn't it be great if the Patriots now went undefeated the rest of the way and you can just blame it all on the replacement officials?
Well, that's what I'm sure Patriots fans will.
The PR department since week 4 of 2012. I'll keep talking. I was done with my stupid things. So.
And evidently, Fred's not ready. Not to eat a Dorito chip.
And he doesn't have an email ready.
It might
still.
Russell, I'm just going over the emails.
Or the phone call. His phone's also blinking. Now he's going to belch.
Russell says it might have been covered, but I would like each of your opinion on the thoughts on these thoughts.
Okay.
Late in the game, fourth quarter, game. Patriots up by 9, Ravens driving, and the Patriots get their first and only sack by Kyle Love. Yes, I'm jumping up and down. I think that is about the nail in the coffin. Then, holding on, I think it was Spikes. What do you guys think? Not even close, and the other guy was actually holding him.
I don't agree with that. I think it was a close call. I think it was a hold.
Yeah. I want to even take it another step. Why would that have been the nail in the coffin?
It wouldn't. That was the play where I thought, okay, maybe it wasn't. Even if it wasn't a hold and it was a bad call and they counted the sack, they were still in field goal range. And
it
that's
also
all
wasn't
they
third down. It wasn't going to set up a fourth down,
no.
I don't think.
Yeah. I wasn't crazy about that one because I felt no matter what, they're going to have a chance for an easy field goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please let me know two things. One, was it a game changer? No. And two, was it even holding? I don't think it was. These guys do.
It's ticky-tacky a little bit. I mean, it can go either way, but I think it's a hold.
I thought he had his arms around him. I agree with Andy. I thought it was a hold.
I don't love it being who I am, the guy who likes linebackers and fullbacks and stuff.
Right. I
but
mean, there's a lot of hits that I don't love the penalties that they draw, but they consistently draw flags.
Like, I think that was the next play, they throw the touchdown. I think you could have called Torrey Smith for extending his arm, for pushing off. I've seen Randy Moss get it. I've seen
right.
so they
I
call that.
So Edelman get
right.
it earlier in the game.
But I also don't like it. I think it's the game of football, so I'm kind of torn. I think they both could have been called or both not called.
Right.
They both kind of went against the Patriots, so I see why the Patriots fans, you know, were 0-2, and that could go either way.
Right. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Melvin is in Tennessee. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Good.
Doing great, Melvin. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Just getting over the loss a little bit. Upset about the referees, but, you know, who isn't these days? But I just wanted to ask you all,
Seattle.
How much of that loss would you say that it was the defense's fault? I felt like they lost momentum due to the referees. I felt like whenever they tried to get a nut, try to get over on the edge, you know, they were, of course, it felt like it was five down until it gets first down. It was first down, first and a half down, second down, second. They just kept restarting and doing over, and I felt like it caused them to get confused, frustrated, and I wouldn't say maybe that led to their inability to stop the Ravens and allow them to get these yards today.
I would say it was 40% offense, 40% defense, 20% refs, but that 20% made the difference.
Okay. Okay.
Paul's rolling his eyes.
I guess I somewhat agree with that. Yep. And the last thing I say was, what do you think about our defensive? I like I said yesterday that the offense, I think the offense could easily drive down the field on the Ravens and felt like the Ravens felt that they could drive down the field on the Patriots, vice versa. But I felt like towards the end of the game, the Ravens changed. It just started blitzing. They were like, forget it. We can't stop them. We're going to go get Brady. And they were able to do that. But it seems like the Patriots, whenever somebody has that quick blitz, they never have an answer for it.
Mm.
Yeah, like last year, I feel like the Jets do it. I think they need to I think Brady should know that, maybe throw a flare pass, have him just throw it at the ground or have a slant. They should have a hot route on every play because they know people are coming to get them.
I think if you're playing the Ravens in that type of situation late in the game, you have to assume they're going to come. So every play you call is either, you know, a running play or a quick out or, you know, some type of quick pass. You know, you can't call a play that's going to take more than three-step drop.
But you can't operate right. under the assumption that blitzes catch the offense off guard.
No, that's what I'm saying. It shouldn't catch them
no,
off guard.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't think it did. I think there's a breakdown in the blocking.
Yeah.
I don't think that they were surprised that a guy came, you know, came an extra guy came on that blitz. You got to get him. You got to block him.
Yeah.
I don't think
you can assume that a guy's going to come free like that.
Brady looked like he had no idea what was coming. I mean,
he probably had no idea the guy was going to go unblocked.
Because no one blocked him.
Yeah.
That's my point. Someone's got to block him. As Bill always says, we don't draw it up like that. We don't just say, you just go ahead and go to get the quarterback. We're not going to worry, but we're not going to count for you.
So, once again, we're at the play calling issue. Hmm.
No, an execution.
It's a blocking issue.
An execution issue.
But by blitzing, aren't you by definition rushing an extra guy that is doesn't?
Well, five.
No, yeah. You're rushing more than four.
Right.
I don't think they
That's
rush.
Five.
I don't think they rush seven. Okay. On that play, right. Do you?
How many offensive linemen do you have?
I don't know.
Five.
What do you mean you don't know?
You always have five offensive
five.
Linemen.
I'm being funny.
So
being
unless
funny.
They send six, you at least have man on man.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
If it's called properly and everybody picks a man and, or whatever, yeah. However they
unless,
scheme it up.
You know, but you can also say, you know, the Brady's throwing out, you know, the protection. He might think it's coming from one side, so you account for an extra guy there, and it comes from the other side, and now you're screwed.
Well, yeah.
You know,
now
so,
that's Brady's fault. That's happened. I mean, you remember Bill basically said on the the Takeo Spikes play, he laid that at the feet of the quarterback, that he has to account for that, whatever.
Talk
where,
a little
sometimes
about it in the preseason,
that happens.
But where
that
it's coming
bit.
From can free up a guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If they're bringing an extra guy left and you slide things right, uh-oh.
Right.
That's a problem.
And sometimes
right.
that's, you know, that's scheme.
That happens.
That's scheme,
but to
too,
me, that is execution. That is not a play call. That's, you know, Josh McDaniels was asleep at the wheel because he didn't know they were going to blitz, and he called a seven-step drop that took 17 minutes to develop.
Right. There are times that you recognize it. I'll give you a perfect example. The 59-yard play to Welker was a blitz that they ate up.
Right.
They ate up. Ladarius Webb came from the slot corner on the near side for our TV. Right to left on your radio dial.
Thanks,
no,
Gil.
But he came.
Hand off to no one.
Now I'm thinking of it. He came from the slot. They knew he was coming. Welker settled into a soft zone and was a 59-yard play down the sideline because they picked it up.
Mm-hmm. Why is it not even, though? That's what I'm saying. Whenever somebody's designing the play, instead of shifting right versus shifting left, just block every – just have a good solid wall. I don't see why it's three on one side, three versus the other side. So it wouldn't look so – oh my God! I called the wrong play. I'm going down.
No, they have a variety of ways to set it up. I mean, you can man block, you can zone block, you can slide right, slide left. I mean, there's a million different ways to do it. I have no idea what they did on the play.
Yeah, I don't either.
Only Dante Scarnecchia, Tom Brady, and Ryan Wendell.
You know, if
do.
We're talking about the same play in that fourth quarter late, from what I was told, there was a communication mix-up, and Solder was left guard, you know, blocking no one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's execution. That's. Yeah. To me, communication is execution. That especially on the offensive line, that's one in the same. In the secondary, that's one in the same. Executing is communicating so that everybody is on the same page and doing the right thing.
Right. All right, Melvin. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Melvin.
Let's go over to Pittsburgh. Jim in Pittsburgh says he has a great place for us to eat in Buffalo.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Jim.
Hey, my wife and I went up there a couple of years ago to see the Pats game. It was a lot better then because it was late in the year and Buffalo was already out of it. You can see the game for next to nothing. but there's a place called Mulberry Cafe just south of the city.
Yeah.
We saw it on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, so we went. It is awesome.
Mulberry Cafe.
Yeah, Google it. You can see the video from Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Okay.
Wow. I just ate lunch, and I watched it again a few minutes ago, and I'm starving.
What was your specialty?
Oh, well, he makes his own mozzarella, so the caprese salad is awesome. They make their own Italian sausage. The meatballs are bigger than a baseball, and they're incredible.
And Fred, you like a good meatball.
I like a
good
meatball.
A good meatball.
Yeah,
and the lasagna is like about 6 inches thick.
Wow.
And he makes two different ones every day.
So comfort food.
It's never the same thing. Sometimes
fat
it's got lobster. Sometimes chicken, but watch the video. You guys will all be starving.
Do they have wings?
What's that?
They have wings. Buffalo wings.
You know, I can't remember.
Oh,
I don't think so.
Oh. Yeah, when in Buffalo, you got to have wings, right?
Yeah, you can do that every time.
Well, I do, and I like it.
You know, I don't know how to say that. All I know is I haven't been able to watch a game all year. But I can't believe how pissed off you can get watching the stupid game feed on your phone when you're watching your team lose. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than that. I'm totally with you. I hate that. When you're following on your phone and it goes bad, you feel like you have no control.
Right, right.
And Paul knows. He's done that with Northeastern in many sports for years.
Right. What are you laughing at?
All right.
Okay.
Well, check it out. It's well worth
Mulberry Cafe. Well, okay. Well,
thanks for the tip, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. I love those on the road tips.
I believe Bill got 50,000.
As did Jim Harbaugh. John, not Jim. John.
So they fine Harbaugh.
So they fine Harbaugh. Okay.
It says Harbaugh also fined 50K.
All right.
Put your tin cup away.
That's according to Jeff
Howe. In all fairness, I'll be fair.
John Harbaugh gets screwed.
I think that Bill's fine should have been a little higher.
Me too.
But I think Harbaugh should have been fine.
Me too.
Yeah.
But he got double penalty. I'm not a big fan of this whole, and this is different because it is touching an official and you can't, but he was flagged. So how does he get treated the same as a guy who doesn't get flagged? On some level, he was already penalized. He got a 15-yard penalty.
Well.
I don't think.
The only thing I can say.
Like that. And I don't like it with the players either. It's like two guys hit a quarterback.
Yeah.
One gets 15 yards and the fine, and the other guy just gets the fine because they missed the flag. It seems like if they're equal offenses, you should give a bigger fine because they missed the flag.
Nah, so
I don't like the double
either.
Jeopardy.
I don't think the player should be penalized because the ref missed the call.
It's a solid argument.
You know, so.
It is the same, but I don't like the double jeopardy part of it.
I hear you, but there, it one is, you know, there's no hue and cry to stop holding. You know, that's why there's no fine when a guy holds.
But
there's no penalties. But one is that they're trying to outlaw it from the game.
But let's say the Ed Reed hit on Branch that he got flagged for,
right.
I think he should get fined for that too.
Yes.
Stephen Gregory should not get fined for bumping Todd Heap out of bounds.
Right.
You know, whether he got flagged or not,
right.
He got flagged.
Right.
Because it was a late hit
late
out of bounds.
Late hit out of bounds
but it
existed for decades.
But it wasn't a vicious
right.
late
wasn't
hit.
Wasn't a helmet.
Right. He was right on the sideline. He was clearly out. It was a good call.
Yeah.
Not complaining about the call.
Yeah.
But I don't think he needed to be fined for
a
hit
I
that's
agree with
part
that.
Of football.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a safety issue.
Well, no, but wait a minute. Wasn't Gregory's also, he hit him in the helmet?
No, I didn't think so. If that's what they deemed,
maybe
that's different. But if it was, I don't think he would have gotten the small fine. The headshots have been like 21,000.
But remember, these fines also take into consideration history of the player. So a guy that does it first time, it's not as large as when he does it the second
right.
time.
Right, correct.
But so this might have been Gregory's first fine
so
ever.
So I'm kind of wishy-washy.
But that's what I mean. Now he has a history that
right.
I don't think he deserved.
Well,
now
no,
his second offense,
no,
which
hit
I think
is... he in the helmet, he deserved it.
Well,
I don't think he did. Though.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
I think he just hit him out of bounds.
I agree with you if he did.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have only gotten $7,852 or whatever it was.
Out of bounds,
that's a weird
thing,
if he
just hit him late out of bounds, then no way should he have been fine.
I think that's what
and
it was.
And he could appeal that.
I think that's what it was. It was a late hit out of bounds. That's what they ruled.
Well, that's what they ruled, but... It could have been a helmet involved. I thought
but I
remember.
But I think a helmet is 21,000. I think that's the new number for that, right? Isn't that what Mayo and everybody else got?
Yeah,
I think
some got more.
The high shots.
Somebody had a 31,000 who had a history.
Yeah, I think the base is 20. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know. But the whole Harbaugh thing that I reserve judgment on is evidently it wasn't on. No one has it.
Right.
So I didn't see it. Now, if he went over and aggressively spun the referee around to call timeout and that was his whole thing, then $50,000.
Right.
Now, to me, the way it sounded, you know, the way Michaels and Collinsworth were sort of describing it, was like he was trying to get his attention to call timeout.
Right. If he runs in front of him and they bump shoulders, it's different
to
than
me,
if
just
he
like
grabs
if you're him. Trying, if you're trying to throw a challenge flag and the ref is ignoring you, you need to grab him
right.
and say, I'm challenging. You
right.
can't wait. Every second is precious at that point. So the contact with the ref, to me, isn't the same. I didn't see it.
Right.
So I'm not saying that Harbaugh didn't deserve a fine.
And we can't just believe Harbaugh because he says,
no.
He mistook it as
it was,
I did bump him.
That
and
was
I was
the,
just
and
trying
I'm sure they
to,
that was the most sarcastic.
Film,
that
yeah.
was the most sarcastic, insincere apology
right.
that would not have taken place had the Ravens lost the game.
Right.
He would have been more incensed that maybe than Bill was after the game had they lost.
Right.
So I'm not sitting there saying, well, you apologize for the bumps. I don't think he's admitting to anything. He's not being magnanimous. They won the game, and it was easy for him to say, yeah, I shouldn't have done that.
My most interesting tweet of the day comes from the Jets, where running back Joe McKnight is moving to cornerback, says Rex.
They've been working on that for a while, right?
I just think it's so funny. Like,
he
was such
a
bust. I hated the draft pick when they made him as a running back. I thought he was a bust.
All he can do is return kicks.
And now, well, you know, he was a great athlete going to USC, so at some point he's going to maybe.
They started that last year, and, you know, obviously they have a need.
Revis goes down. McKnight steps in.
Mm.
Brady
Wright.
Goes.
Seamless.
And Brady licks his fingers to throw.
Where's that 25 at?
Phil writes in, just to back up Paul on the McCourty call, it was on 2nd-and-14, and they still had an opportunity to make a play. However, on the Spikes hold, it was clearly a bad call. If anything, Pitta was holding him. See attached photo. In general, there were loads of bad loads of bad
Fred
calls.
Fred choked on it.
Loads of bad calls for both teams, though. Yes. I definitely think the Patriots had the worst of it. He's right. That doesn't mean you can say that the defeat is purely on the refs. Bad calls are made all the time, even with regular refs. You just got to go on, get on with it. The bigger issue with these so-called replacements is not the calls, but the fact that most of these guys don't know the rules. How can you not know that a call can't be challenged if there aren't any timeouts left or place the ball in the wrong spot by 12 yards? It's really bad when the casual fan knows the ref is screwed up. At least it looks like there's a resolution in sight.
Yes.
So I'm so glad we're not going to have to talk about that anymore.
Yeah, me too, because we'll see the same thing happen over
the
next
10
weeks.
We won't, Fred, but Paul's going to say he missed that hold. Oh, see, I told you nothing would be
every
better.
Every week we're going to come in.
Talk,
did you say that?
I'm not going to talk about missed calls because that's stupid. But I'll guarantee you that someone will get a challenge that they shouldn't have gotten, and the ball will get misspotted when it shouldn't have been, because those things happen all the time. That's all I'm saying. But the calls get missed. That's not.
Joel and Merrimack, I'm done with the ref crap, and I'm back on to thoughts about the Patriots, and I have several.
The referees cost us the game.
First, the defense did not have a stellar game. No pressure on a static quarterback is inexcusable. Multiple picks drop, missed tackles. We lucked up that Flacco was not that accurate. Next thought, at least five teams. It must be the Doritos.
It's the Coke.
I haven't even
doesn't matter. It has bubbles in it. That's what causes you to do that.
Next thought, at least five teams that were in the playoffs last year are below 500. Next thought, negative running plays. We've had too many of those this year. Enough already with the reverses and tossbacks. Don't start your running back 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Third down percentages, we are less than 50% on third down this year. According to Gresham Zoe, Gronk did not have as many catches because he was being held in to block. When you have one of, if not the best receiving tight ends in the NFL, he should not be held back to block. That is the job of Ben Watson and Daniel Grahams of the world. And if, Manoa Nua, whatever, can't block, dump
Manua,
him.
He got Manua.
Can't block, dump him, or better yet, find offensive linemen who can block. All of this has to be improved before we play the Bills on Sunday, or we could end up 1-3.
The negative run thing is interesting. I want to get Andy's thought. You think we run wide too much?
No, I think we do.
I wanted to get Andy.
Not really. I mean, I know that was a criticism of Ridley, is that he runs a little wide too much.
Well, I think that a lot of them, I mean, I'm not blaming Ridley for bouncing them wide. I think they have a lot of plays that are designed to go wide.
I don't know.
I think that's what lends itself to negative runs. I mean, if you're running between the tackles, chances are you're not going to lose yardage, right?
Sure.
So just something to bring
chances
up.
Chances are you're also not going to get, 30-yard runs down the sideline and 17-yard runs.
Correct, but I think that it's very difficult to run wide in the NFL consistently. Now, they did it extremely well in week one.
Right.
Extremely well. I mean, they got the edge 6-7 times in that game. But I think it's hard to do that.
I love how we question everything when we lose.
No.
I'm not a criticism of you. It's just
I'm asking.
If the field goal is called wide,
if Gostowski
and
makes
he hits
it,
his,
and,
we're 3-0, and are we criticizing? I'm sick of all these lame ass plays, trick plays, running wide,
and it's
this cover. The corners are 7 yards off instead of five. I mean,
if you make yours and they miss theirs, it's a whole different outlook.
And that's why you can understand why coaches get so frustrated, with the second guessing.
Or it's also why Bill says every game comes down to a couple plays. It's close.
Well, yeah.
Blah, blah,
I mean,
blah.
In Bill's defense, he would be saying all these things.
Yeah.
To us. He'd be yelling at us for saying how great they are being 3-0.
Right.
Tackling.
John says.
Right.
By the way, Pete Prisco almost had an Andy Hart like. He picked us to go 16-0, and we're 1-2. Three games in, he has two losses on a perfect record.
John
Eric's
says,
here.
I have a. Yep. Let him get settled. He likes to get settled.
He does.
I have a white waffle.
He is a methodical sort.
I have a question in the Baltimore game about 13:56 in the second quarter. The Ravens were called for holding on second down and 6. So now it's 2nd and 16 on the Ravens 27. On the next play, Peterson runs the ball to the 37 or 38 and is given a first down. How does that happen?
Who is Peterson?
I don't know.
I wasn't listening. Sorry.
Now I'm going to guess it was Bernard Pierce. And what happened on that play is the holds took place downfield. So it wasn't 2nd and 16. God bless you, Andy. It was from the spot of the foul, not from the original
line of
scrimmage.
It
wasn't
a backfield or line of scrimmage.
Which was very similar, by the way, to Gronkowski's big holding penalty against Arizona. It didn't become 1st and 20 after that play. It became 2nd and 11 because the hold had taken place 10 yards downfield. Well, 9 yards downfield because it pushed it to 2nd and 11. Same thing. The hold takes, the call is marked off from where it happens.
Spot foul.
Unless it's
at the line
unless
of scrimmage.
Unless it's behind the line of scrimmage. Right. You don't lose more than 10 yards.
You should.
Eric's here.
There's a lot of things I think you should. I think if there's two personal fouls in the play, you should lose 30 yards. Why does only one take precedent? There's a lot of those little things about the rules that, yeah, as you are not surprised to find out, I don't agree with.
Hey, Eric.
First of all, Freddie, I need to know, what kind of interview is this going to be?
All right, enough.
I don't think we're talking about that.
We're not talking about that.
Because I'm not talking about practice, if that's what you want to know.
Julian Edelman.
Yes, not there. Logan Mankins, more importantly, not there.
Ooh. That's not good.
More importantly?
Well,
More importantly.
Yeah.
No, but I like the Edelman. I love the, you know, last week he had a bit, because he had a better May than Welker. You know, he was.
You're not talking to Bill Belichick.
Okay.
You're not talking to Bill Belichick. You're talking to us. You're talking to reasonable men who know that the $50 million guard is very important to the franchise. That's not good. Eric's right.
That's
He's
not
a good,
good
analysis
all.
There.
No,
not good.
And we talked about this last week, Eric. He had been a staple in the locker room so far this year.
Oh, sure.
Until he showed up on the injury report last week. Haven't seen him since.
Well, I did.
Yep.
He was picking fights with the Ravens, but
no, I'm talking about the locker room.
He gets cranky when he's hurt.
That may be because he was really ornery the other night.
And he gets cranky and he goes into hiding.
And this is the guy who, when he came back this summer, said, "You know, I was the guy who always used to make fun of people for missing time."
Right. But he hasn't missed any practice. I mean, any game yet.
No. But for missing practice, even he said I used to make fun of those type of guys.
He's learning it's not just toughness. There's luck involved when you go through a spring as long as he did.
And he obviously, as tough a guy as he is, because we know he played on, you know, ACL tears last year.
I'm not saying he's learning, but the thing Paul yells at me
he
for
must
is the difference
be
between hurt and injured.
No, but he must be
because he turned an injury into just a hurt last year.
Well,
he had a torn ACL, which is an injury. He made it just a hurt,
which makes me think that there must be something really.
Well, I mean, I don't want to jump to too much. He could just be doing a lot of rehab therapy.
Rehab,
yes,
rehab.
What was he listed as last week?
Hip.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I also get into these weird things that is common with some people. If you come back too early from a separate injury, it throws your whole thing out of whack.
Especially if it's a hip.
Right. Maybe you need to be a chiropractor involved because, you know, maybe the knee's favoring it and that is put pressure on the hip.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the hip bone.
It's connected to the
knee bone.
Yep.
Well, not really. It's a thigh.
Really.
You know, you get the point.
So no Mankins.
No Edelman and Mankins are the headlines. I mean, you knew Hernandez wasn't going to be there.
Right.
And then Dedrick and Francis, who had ankles crop up last week, are the other two. So five total missing.
How about the new guy? Was he out there?
New guy was out there. Yep, number 9-3, Terrell McClain.
Because we're trying to figure out why he was let go.
Did he yell at you from afar?
Is he limping? Was there any sign of some injury that, you know?
Why McClain was let go from Carolina?
Yeah.
No, I mean, he seemed fine. Yeah.
Third round picks who start 12 games
don't usually find themselves cut. Exactly. No, it's I don't
curious.
Know what to make of it.
Curious is a good.
That's a good word. Good.
I don't want to jump to conclusions. You know, there's a lot of weird stuff in the NFL, so we don't want to label him an injury or a...
Now, did the size of the media decrease at practice, or was it still big?
No, it probably decreased
a
little
bit. Well, it has to. Yeah. It's only one per outlet.
Once everybody, you know, grilled Bill Belichick and got
So you guys heard, I assume?
No, we haven't.
No.
Oh, the refing?
Oh, the 50K.
50,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now,
and that Harbaugh did, too.
Was that...
No, because it happened while we were at practice.
Okay. All right.
Conveniently.
Really has no control of.
Did Bill say anything
about that?
No, about anything
in general. Did he speak?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was asked at one point about being fined. This was before we heard, and he said, "Whatever the league decides, I'll comply
was it a
with."
News guy?
And, no, it was the new Channel 7 sports guy whose name escapes me.
Oh. Were there news guys there?
New this year, I mean.
Did the news guys ask any questions?
There were a couple of I'm trying to let me just go back to my
for that.
Here. No, they were.
Oh.
What
are they here for? Why are they new?
Well,
guys?
I'm sure they were here for that. Yeah, I'm sure that's the only reason why those guys were here.
Did you guys talk about the Harbaugh thing? Jeff Howe is now tweeting, "I misread an email about Harbaugh. Never got any info that he had been fined. That was my screw up. Sorry."
Ooh. So Harbaugh did not get fined.
Well, that's a good thing then. We were at practice too, and
maybe or maybe not.
We had heard. Somebody said, Jeff tweeted that Harbaugh's getting $50,000 too, and we were like, let's hold off on that.
Oh.
Well, because he's done that before, where he's misread things and sent out.
Well, that was probably a bad hire by you.
Listen, I think Jeff does a fine job, but he's got to tighten up. Got to clean up a few things. Got to clean up a few things.
But you know what? That's one of those modern media things. Immediate boom. Yeah, I saw this. Boom. 50 get. Oh, that didn't say that. Untweet.
Right.
Black right. jerseys.
So they lost.
I know. No I just ask every week.
They all wore black jerseys.
They all wore black jerseys. They were mourning.
All right.
There you go.
Anything else?
Not really.
Who's playing? You don't see that. Forget it.
No.
I'll ask you on Sunday.
Okay.
Who was the third guy through the bags?
508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Webradio at Patriots.com is the email address. Ramon in Dallas says, I agree with Paul. The defense lost the game by default, but the blame goes on the offense for not securing it. Now to my question, which helps our Patriots offense more, an effective running game or a wideout who could go deep effectively? I'm not worried about the season yet. Just hope we can get it together by Sunday.
Effective running game.
Helps more than going long effectively?
I think so. Yeah. I think a consistent running game, going long effectively, a couple plays, and I know there's the whole Moss factor, they fear it, but I think if you can run the ball, it's really good to thing to have up your sleeve.
I agree with Andy that would be my choice out of those two. I'm not really on board with they're missing a piece offensively. I think they have what they need. You know, Hernandez's injury is big. That's a big injury, and maybe there might be a little transition here, but I like what they have offensively. I think they have a good mix.
So if they have to transition now that Hernandez is out, when he comes back, do they have to transition back?
Possible to transition and then untransitioned?
You know, uh-huh. Is there like a period where they have to get settled once he comes back? Or
I know that the Reggie Bush injury seems like it's going to be minor, but rank the injuries in the AFC East right now. Hernandez, Revis, Bush, and Spiller / Jackson.
Revis number one.
Revis one, Hernandez two.
That's what I would go with, too.
Yeah.
And I would say Bush, Spiller, three. I mean, Jackson, Spiller, three, and
because you lost
Bush,
two.
Four.
I can suck with Bush. I can suck without Bush.
Yeah, and also, as you said, it seems to be the least.
Right, but even pretended it, I still think it's fourth, even if it's a major injury. Because
they're not a player.
Right.
WCC writes in about the game Sunday. If they lose, I will be nervous, he says. I'm not emotionally prepared to lose this game, but that's because I'm an admitted homer. With the Patriots and Sox, sorry, Andy, identity and insecurity issues. However, logically, Big Head is right. Paulie is wrong. Even if we lose the next two games, there will still be plenty of opportunity to turn it around, go on a run, and be playoff bound. Yeah, unfortunately, when it comes to my fandom, I'm not logical.
I think you're right in terms of the season's not over at 1-3. I don't think anyone's suggesting that. I'm saying I would be nervous that they're going to be the team that I thought they were. You know, you can rattle off, you know, 12 in a row and go 13-3. Yeah, you could. If you're 1-3, I don't think you will. I don't think you will do that. And if you're 11-5 or so, or 10-6, you're not getting a bye. Now you're on the road, and now your job becomes a lot more difficult.
Do you think there's no chance 11-5 is a bye?
No chance? No, I don't think there's no chance of that.
I think there's a chance this year.
You could get that.
With all the teams
this year. If Houston's as good as you say they are, then they're going to be better than 11-5, right?
Probably.
No?
Assuming Schaub can make it through the season.
I haven't even released a Wilson Hart Power Index
yet. But you love Houston.
I like Houston. Don't say I love.
You're on record.
No.
You're on record.
I got defensive about Houston because you were
mocking
the Wilson
most associated
Hart Power
with
Index.
Houston is? Hey, with Andy Hart in Houston is?
By the way, next Tuesday, first edition.
The first Wilson Hart?
Wilson Hart Power Index. All I'm saying is the Patriots would be good to get a win this weekend because I don't think they're going to fare very well if they don't.
You know, to make it serious, do you think that Houston will be better than 11-5?
I do.
I do, having not looked at their schedule.
And I haven't either. I haven't.
I'm assuming.
Well, consider that, so that they get to play the
Colts and
twice,
Jags.
The Jacksonville.
I'm guessing yes.
You know, yeah.
I think they'll be better than 11-5.
But then beyond that, who?
But now all you have to do is have one team finish at 11-5 or better, and you don't. I mean, if Baltimore finishes 11-5,
you probably lose.
Then you can't finish 11-5 and get a bye.
Right. So yes, but I still think it's possible. And I there's a little bit of me that doesn't trust Houston. As much as I think they have all the parts be good, I don't necessarily trust them to dominate.
I trust Baltimore more than I do Houston in terms of how many wins they're going to have, and I don't think Baltimore's as good as Houston.
I don't trust either of them, and that's why you get back to my thing where you could be 11-win teams.
They're not as talented as Houston. They're certainly not as talented defensively as Houston.
No, God, no.
Ed writes in, the loss of Revis for the Jets is going to have a huge impact on their defense and limit
what they're able to do. I was wondering, if the Patriots lost McCurdy, would it make any difference in our pass defense?
Yes.
When you're 31 out of 32,
no, but if they lost McCurdy,
how worse can it get?
It didn't really make a difference last year. He missed a couple of games, and it was the same stuff that we saw with him, right?
Yeah, he doesn't – I mean, Revis is singular. He shuts down really a side of the field almost, not just a player. So that makes gives you so much more flexibility with your defense.
And we should – I mean
– you can't compare the two.
You can't compare Devin McCourty to anybody right now. He just needs to worry about being Devin McCourty and making a few plays.
Yeah, he's had a lot of those today.
A lot of what?
Just needs to worry about being Devin
Well,
McCourty.
He does. I mean, forget the comparisons. Forget the first-round pick. You know, I almost feel like a coach. Just make one play, and then the next one try to make two. You know, you're beyond.
Do
you're no
your
longer
job.
Well, on one play, though. Your job is not defensive captain. Your job is not first-round pick. Your job is not former Pro Bowler. Your job is not number one corner. Your job is to cover whoever is right there on this snap right now and then try to make it two.
That's not fair, Amy. What? Can't ask him to cover a wide receiver.
Not from 7 yards off or whatever Bedard thinks is on.
Darius is really upset. He says, have you looked at our wide receiver roster lately? Are you kidding me? All we did was add Lloyd. We brought in all those receivers. All we could find was Lloyd. So how are we going to stretch any defense vertically? And now we don't even have a middle game with Hernandez out and having to hold Gronk in to block.
Did I miss the game Sunday night?
We can't even dump the ball off to our running backs over the middle. We used to do that a lot back in the Super Bowl winning years. Isn't that something Vereen is supposed to be good at? My prediction, 1-3 record to start. We will lose to the Bills. All we have is Lloyd and Welker. Don't even mention Branch. He's no threat whatsoever. Just double-team Lloyd, bump Welker around when he releases from the line, and clog up the middle. Game, set, match, Bills win.
What about Gronkowski?
He's blocking.
He's back there blocking.
Okay. I guess it's just easy to bump Welker and hold him to 8 for 142. I can't believe how much I have to defend Wes Welker.
It is becoming a little funny.
It's amazing to me that I'm put in a position where after 5 years of telling you I didn't think that he was anything special, I have to sit there and wonder if I'm not watching the same games as everybody else.
Right.
You know what I really
That's
like to watch
That's two games
with
in a
him?
Row that he was a playmaking receiver.
When he catches that ball, I mean, on the 59-yarder,
what is he averaging, like 20
yards? He tries
to catch?
Beat the guy, and he starts pumping real fast in his neck. It's very enjoyable to watch.
He's got that mad look.
And you know there's no chance it's going to happen. Right. He's going to get caught somewhere.
Right. Well, he did it.
He got caught easy on that play.
Well,
he
last
did, but
year.
Against Miami,
no,
went 99.
I know, but
well,
he does this
was,
thing
no
where
it's
felt.
No.
His pads raise up, his head sets down, he starts to really –
He runs
I like watching it.
He runs
I really do, and I'm not trying to make fun of him. Like, I enjoy –
Well, and he's so
when you can see the effort,
the
you
ball,
mean.
Yeah. The
and
ball
I can
looks,
see in my head it's not going to work.
The ball looks bigger
in
his hands.
In his hands than it does yes. other guys' hands. You know?
And he knows it's not going to work because he's always looking back because he knows somebody's
right.
coming.
Right.
Like, real speed burners
Toronto,
are
yeah.
like, gone. I'm gone. Yeah. You're not going to catch me, so I don't have to look at anything. But he's like pumping, right. and there's so much effort.
Yeah.
I love it.
Dan of Virginia's on the line. Hey, Dan.
Hey, g'day, team. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, Mike.
I was at the game on Sunday night, and boy, was that one loud purple crowd.
Yeah. I heard somebody here complaining how Tom Brady must have been thinking, how come our fans don't get that loud?
Yeah, it was an interesting comparison. I went to the Redskins game last year, and the difference was just incredible. But I think most of my questions and comments regarding the refereeing, Gronkowski and Woodhead have been made over the last couple of days. So I just want to give a shout-out to Eric. Being at the game without the benefit of curse words, his On Further Review column really helped identify a number of issues and calls that went against us because obviously it was pretty one-sided at the arena. But
oh,
the question
thank
I
you.
Want to ask,
appreciate it.
But the question I just want to ask regarding
job,
the quote-unquote field goal at the end.
Quote-unquote.
Does that strengthen the argument at all for the computer chips and the footballs that they were discussing, you know, a couple of years ago?
A little bit.
Yeah.
It strengthens the argument for, can anything be done to improve this situation?
I agree.
Yes.
Just lengthen the damn posts.
Well, we got a guy who volunteered. He's a welder. He said he'll come in, he'll add 10 feet to every post. All he wants is like 3,000 per city.
I saw that guy.
Yeah.
And I think he threw a line at the end. He also wants a pension.
But you're out.
There is definitely
a deal breaker.
I would have to think they discuss this stuff because, I mean, this isn't just, you know, Browns Colts who gets the number 5 pick in the draft. This is an AFC Championship game rematch. It's a pretty big game. It could have been the exact same game in January,
right?
And somebody goes to a Super Bowl and no one really knows was it good or not,
right? There shouldn't be. there shouldn't be any question about whether or not a field goal is good.
Right. So raise them.
So whatever you need to do in order so there is never, ever a question again, do it.
My next question is, if you do raise them, now they're probably going to be a little more wobbly, and they already wobble in the wind. Is that fair?
Yeah, because now they might not line up perfectly straight.
Right.
They might, like,
bend. Now they're wider, they're skinnier. Now somehow you have to hold them together, but if you hold them together, something could hit. I just...
There's got to be something.
There's always something that you have to think about the next phase of. If I fix this, could I create any problem with it?
Right.
And I don't think you would really create a lot of problems, but you need to think it out.
So you think the engineers have looked at it and goes, this is the maximum height that we can go wobbling being a factor?
I don't think 1 minute has been spent thinking about it. I think it will be now.
Right.
I mean, I think it's archaic. What we talked about yesterday, the guy with the rope.
Now the college goalposts, have they been raised yet? Because they used to be much shorter.
I think they raised them a while ago.
Did they?
Yeah.
Because for a while they were
wider too, weren't they?
They
were wider too. Now they're the same.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
The hash marks are still wider in the college, but the goalposts are the same size.
All right.
But FIFA is looking at the chips with the soccer balls, and with the chips you also get the benefit of whether or not things are actually in the ball's actually in the end zone and when it crosses the sideline because it was a
Is GPS good enough for that now?
Yeah, there's so much bodies blocking things.
And is it good? I mean, where is the sensor in the football? And which part of the football?
It should be on both tips.
Is just the tips?
Just the tip.
And is it good enough? I mean, is GPS now down to a tenth of an inch or whatever? I mean,
not that I know of. Unless there's some CIA,
I think there might be because I know a lot of land surveyors use GPSs.
Oh, right, to do surveys.
So I don't know. They may have perfected the. Now you get into cost. What's the cost involved? Right. There's not a lot of cost involved with 10 more feet of pipe up the sides.
Right.
That, I mean, I think is a quick fix that I don't see, aside from my little bendy thing, I don't see as a huge downside to that.
Well, just as long as they're not using Google Maps to.
Well, I thought it was Apple Maps that was the bad one.
Apple Maps, sorry, that's the one. Yeah. Apple Maps. Yeah, as long as they're not using Apple Maps.
Yeah.
All right, Dan.
All right, Dan.
Thanks,
good night, Mike.
What if you did the thing, you know, like some of the colleges have now with instead of, you know, the one post in the middle?
Sure.
Wouldn't that help the bendy problem?
Possibly. You know, I don't know.
Forgive the, the rudimentary description. But if you had two posts underneath the, you know, the goal posts, like they do at, say, Florida State.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I would think the uprights would stand up a little bit
or why not
higher
just
for you
make it,
more evenly.
You know, at the top, do a crossbar. So it becomes a closed rectangle. If it hits that bar, it's good, obviously. But
you're really changing the game, though.
But also that keeps it from, you know, making it any, you know, smaller than it would.
But now you've kind of changed the game.
Why is that?
Because you've put a top on the.
Yeah, but you don't have to hit it in it. Anything, even if it's above it, it's still good.
Yeah. I thought you meant
just
it was a box
for stability.
Now.
Don't have to hit it in the box, but you do run the risk of hitting the corner.
Right, and what happens
not knowing.
Then?
And then it's good.
The corner is good, according to Fred.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I do, and necessarily agree with the
ruling. Let's say
the
kick the other night, you know, let's say that was, I mean, that came very close to hitting the junction there.
Yeah.
Well, did it hit the crossbar or did it hit the upright?
It's good.
It's good, says Fred.
Now, at what point does it become the corner? What if it hits
when the other team kicks it?
Right, like it could hit just below the crossbar, and you say that's kind of the corner. So is that good?
Well, what we do is we wait.
Here's what we do, right? Yeah, right.
We wait until Monday when all the fan videos are on YouTube, and then we have
Tucker
a national vote. Then we have a national vote.
Do you think it was good, Fan Nation?
Yeah. Christian says, "I can't wait for the Wilson Hart throw a dart power index. Suck it, fathead."
Mother already did.
Wow. See now.
Another classy response from Andy Hart.
Oh, I'm supposed to reply classily to suck it, fathead? John Rook, you know what he is, that guy? He's what you called strippers. You are an a-hole.
James writes in, Adam Carolla has been saying for years he would put lasers in the post himself. Not worried about the Patriots. I feel really bad for the Bills is all I know.
But the laser thing, would the laser go on the inside edge? And if you hit the laser, it's no good? Or, like, because the part of the round post, we've all seen, it can go any direction.
It can deflect off the post
depending on where it hits.
Or back.
Right.
So now if it's a laser.
So if it's a laser, you're saying
that if it hits. The easy one is just extend the post.
That's what I think.
And I'll deal with it later if I find out it changes the kicker's trajectory or something. Maybe I need to change something down the road. But for now, it seems pretty simple.
And, you know, like, if let's say it was a really, really windy day. what you do is you, you know, get those guys that you're paying $10 an hour. You have ropes on the outside, and they have to hold it down while the field goal's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's on the up and up. Here comes the kick. Give it a pull, buddy.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be a way.
Put him back on the goal line.
There's got to be a way.
Uh-oh, Gostkowski's going to – oh, the militia is moving the field goal.
It goes way over.
Yeah, the guy's in the militia suit doing it. And then, you know, at last resort, you just shoot the ball out of the air when it's the other team and you think it's going to be good.
Oh, it's a do-over. That's my bad. Right. That's my bad.
Misfired. Yeah, my, no.
John Rook's here with the playbook. How you doing, John?
Good. Why can't we just put cameras at the base of the pole and shoot straight up?
Well, the thing is, we were just talking about that. The pole itself is round. So yeah. If you hit the pole, it can go either way. What happens when it hits that laser?
How do you know exactly where it hit the post?
It would have gone.
You know what I mean?
But if you put a video camera at the base of the pole, shoot it straight up, wouldn't you be able to definitively tell with a video replay if the ball crossed over it or outside of it?
Not if it's one camera, because you need that XY
axis. Is it inside the post, you mean?
No, I'm talking about strapping it, like, behind it.
Well, no, now you're
behind it. Where it shoots straight up.
Well, now you're not actually under it.
They have those.
No, they don't.
No,
I've seen cameras on the crossbar.
It's on the crossbar. He's talking about on the upright.
Look, here's the crossbar, right? Okay, yeah. You're going to put a camera right here.
John has got his
behind
thumb
it.
In his finger. Andy's
going to do play by play.
And
you're
going to
shoot. You're going to shoot straight up the pole, so you'll be able to see the angle of the ball as if it comes right over the camera.
No, because you're behind it by 5 inches. The camera's big.
You can put minuscule cameras. Well, maybe you should do that.
Why don't we just extend the poles?
Well, can you have a camera at the very top?
Well, how long are we going to extend them?
10 feet. If that doesn't work, we'll go 20 next year.
You never see a ball go.
Yeah, what's the highest
higher.
Kick you've ever
That's what
seen?
I mean.
Yeah.
What's the highest,
kick
that went through an upright and was questioned? I mean,
they've gone over the net. I've seen them go over the net.
Yeah,
you know, but
do you need more than 10 yards higher or whatever it is?
But that's 20. I think if you mount them on the very tops of the poles, you know, so if you get a kick that goes very high, you can see clearly whether or not it's in
when
or outside of the net.
Those are the short ones that are still on the rise.
But you're still not eliminating the problem.
Yeah.
The rule states that if it goes over the top of the upright, it's good. And we're trying to eliminate that as being part of the problem.
Oh, that is the rule?
Yeah, if it goes over the top,
they consider it good.
That's why that kick was good the other night.
Terrible rule.
Yeah.
And
it is a terrible ball. It should have to be in.
Of course it's
not
a terrible
rule. If you're not going to have
the post
for it to bounce off.
And I don't care about the kick the other night. How do you know?
Well, that would solve the problem.
You have the opportunity.
You can get rid of all cameras.
Get
rid of all cameras if you change the rule and say it's got to be inside the upright.
Well, I don't think you're eliminating
entirely
problems,
inside.
Though.
Yes.
I don't think you're
entirely.
Eliminating the problem.
No, you're not.
You have an upright that's high enough to be higher than any possible kick.
Well, no. John's saying you have to put it between the uprights.
Between the
uprights. If it goes over the uprights, it's not good.
It's no good.
But what I'm saying
is you're putting your top on the box.
But if there's no upright there, it's a judgment call whether that was inside the upright or over.
He's saying if it's above the upright, it's no good.
Correct.
You have to put it in the box.
Correct. In other words, make the upright a box.
Now we're back to a box.
Yeah, I don't want to change the game.
But then you can make it a lot taller and not worry about stability.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what. Just make the thing a box, and there you go. Solve problem. There you go.
But a taller box. We're going to add it about 10 yards and then top it. Boom. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to add that to it.
That's fair.
So that increases the likelihood of a block.
Call the league.
Because you can't kick it as high.
Well, you can. Because like we said, how many kicks have you seen?
Actually, you should leave it where it is. You want to put some interest back in the game.
Yeah, they should go
then you're
going to
make the
every
block.
Film ever
you're
going to
make
kick.
The block a part of the game if you create that block, that box where it is right now.
That's you want to put some interest in it, you put them back on the goal line instead of the end.
All right, we got to get interest in the game because
they're
really hurting.
Let's get rid of field goals.
Well, no.
All right, John's going to be here for the next 2 hours.
So a top would change the game, but getting rid of field goals wouldn't.
I don't want to take a
cold hard football facts with Kerry Byrne at 4:00. Stay tuned for that at 4:00. John's got a lot of emails we didn't get to, John, so we saved them for you.
Oh boy!
Have a good show, and we will see you tomorrow.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.